Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on third and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the 2007 NFL
season. Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Patriots Playbook. I'm Mike Parenti, your guest host this afternoon, filling in for John Rook with me for the second show. Second time in how many months now?
Second time in what, 2 months?
2 months here. Is successful author, sports editor, blogger, entrepreneur, Chris Price. Chris,
man about town, too. How are you?
I'm doing all right.
I'm doing okay, man. I'm doing okay.
It's playoff football, Chris.
It's playoff football. This is the time, and Seymour said this yesterday, you got to get jacked up for this time of year. If you could fast forward to this time of year.
Yeah.
This is what it should be year-round.
You have no pulse.
This is exactly. This is the environment. This is the intensity level. This is the way it should be all year-round.
Yeah, I kind of like this stuff. I like the hype leading up to these games. Not a big fan of the matchup. Don't really find it all that interesting. I know everybody here does. I know it's football fever.
But there's still enough, not to use a play on words here, but there's still enough spice. There's still enough,
there's still enough to it.
To get people interested. It wouldn't have been as good. I still would have said that, you know, for my money, a better matchup would have been Tennessee because the season-ending game last year and all the bad blood that came out of that. You know, the Rodney Harrison, even though Bobby Wade isn't with Tennessee anymore, there's still a lot of bad blood.
We'd still run that into the ground for five days, of course.
Are you kidding me?
You know what, though? But now I'm glad you brought that up because the Titans stink. I'm glad the Titans aren't coming to town either because that'd be a wipeout.
Yeah.
I don't like either of these teams. The real fun starts in the AFC Championship.
Yeah, it does.
This is like the appetizer.
It does.
This is like getting your chicken wings before you get your filet mignon.
That's a perfect way
to play. Do you eat chicken wings with filet mignon?
I don't eat chicken wings with filet mignon.
It's a bad
combination. But I enjoy them separately, not together, though.
This is like your bruschetta before your filet mignon, your calamari, your balsamic vinegar calamari, if you happen to like the balsamic vinegar. I don't happen to like this matchup. I just don't like it.
From a Patriots perspective, or from
it's
not a very compelling
game? No, it's not a very compelling game to me.
Why not?
I still haven't gotten over 2005, okay? This is going to sound funny. I know this was 2 years ago. I remember the Jaguars coming in here, and this team was hyped up. These guys are physical. They were 12-4. This is going to be a tough game. It was 28-3.
It wasn't even a game.
And all I could think about was earlier that season, I remember Tampa Bay coming here. And the Buccaneers had a strong defense that year. This is a good football team. John Gruden is Chucky, the offensive mastermind. Ooh, he sticks the dagger in and he twists it. Remember Belichick's press conference? He sticks the dagger in and then he pulls it out and he twists it. All this stuff, and the game was a complete blowout.
Yeah.
Another warm weather fraud coming here in a cold weather game and flopping.
Oh, but no, you know what? We're overlooking what every single national pundit is telling us.
What?
That Jacksonville's tough.
Ooh, they're physical.
Jacksonville's not
a
warm weather team. They're not the kind of warm weather team that wilts.
Oh, they won a game in the snow in Pittsburgh.
They won a game in the snow in Pittsburgh. We're hearing this from national pundits coast to coast are telling us that this is not a Jacksonville team. This is not your typical warm weather team. I buy into some of that. I buy into some of that. You know, because And granted, they're not a great team, but they can run the football better than almost anyone else in the NFL. And
that's a very good point.
That's not typical of these warm weather teams. You know, and they have had some success north of the Mason-Dixon line. You know, they have had some success when it's been important. You know, big games in the cold weather. That being said, I still don't think they have what it takes to beat the Patriots coming in this Saturday night.
See, I'm with you on that because I do think, and I have to kind of get this out of my head, I got to forget about 2005 and focus on now. It's 2 years later. This is a different team. Del Rio is more seasoned as a coach. There's a new quarterback. Jones-Drew has been added to the mix. There's new players on both sides of the ball. And I understand that, but I just don't like the matchup. I think this team is too one-dimensional. And I know Garrard has had a nice year. I know Garrard's numbers are very good. He's very efficient. Doesn't make a lot of mistakes because he isn't put in a position where he has to make the mistakes. Mm-hmm. They run the ball so well that just about any fool can run that offense from behind center in my book. When you're rushing for 150 yards a game, You don't have to do much to not screw it up.
Yeah.
I'll give you the keys to the car. Don't wrap it around a pole.
They don't ask him to do a whole lot.
No.
I was on another show a couple of days ago.
And hey, was, another show.
There we go. The theme is basically, you know what? We don't ask Gerard to do we don't ask him to win games for us.
Right.
We just ask him not to lose games.
This is like an 0-1 Brady.
Well, it's not even an 0-1 Brady. You know what? Brady even then put up better numbers than Gerard has so far.
Well, he did have to win the snow game.
He did have
one.
Exactly.
He had to lead two drives there. But
I think Gerard is a different kind of quarterback. I think that there's some similarities there, but I think really overall, I think they rely, or the 2001 Patriots relied more on Brady than this team relies on David Gerard.
You're right, because this Jacksonville team, much better running game than the Oregon Patriots.
It is, exactly.
Not even comparable.
Smith? Exactly. Antoine Smith had a
nice year. He's not Fred Taylor, though.
Exactly.
He's not even Jones-Drew.
He's not even Maurice Jones-Drew. That's an excellent point. I think David Gerard, for what they asked him to do, usually does it very, very well. But if you make him a one-dimensional quarterback, if you put 9, even 10 guys up on the line there, and we can get into this, you know, more of this a little bit later. Mm-hmm. I don't think we're going to see Rodney Harrison playing too far off the line all night on Saturday night.
No.
If you make them a one-dimensional team, if you get up on them by a couple of scores early and you take away that running game, then I think it's going to be a long night for Jackson.
He's barely thrown more than 30 passes a game this year at any point. I mean, he throws like 20, 25 times a game. You make him throw 35 to 40 times, the Jaguars will lose, and they will lose hard. They will lose royally.
Now, he has had a couple of games where he's gone over 30 pass attempts. I looked this up last night. I don't know how many, but he's gone over 30 pass attempts in a few games this year, and they've won. Now, whether or not they faced a team as good as the Patriots,
that's the thing.
Exactly. I think if they make Gerard a one-dimensional quarterback, if they force Gerard to beat them through the air, I think the Patriots are going to win this football game, and they're going to win it quite handily.
You know, a lot of people are really hyping up Gerard, and deservedly so, for that 4th-and-2 scramble in the fourth quarter against
Pittsburgh.
That was
a big play at a big moment.
It was a play of the season, but he did not play a good game.
Yeah, he did not statistically.
Between he and Roethlisberger, they were trying to give that game to each other.
Exactly.
That was not a good performance, and that was a game where he threw a lot and did not look very good. At times, even Pittsburgh at times came out throwing the football and was able to spread out that Jacksonville defense, which we'll talk about a little bit later. But I was not impressed with Gerard in that game outside of that one play. So I guess you can say, okay, he showed some poise, but not a complete effort. You cannot, if he plays like that on Saturday night, board up the bus and fly home at halftime.
Exactly. In the second half, I think Jacksonville got away from what made them a very good football team. I think they got out of their rhythm. I think they got out of the context of their offense. Their offense is all about running the football, beating you up, taking time off the clock, and kind of putting together some long, sustained drives. I think for some reason in the second half, they started to throw the football, and I think that really kind of started to catch up with them. I don't know why. I'm also, again, I'm really curious as to see what kind of Jacksonville team is going to show up Saturday night. Is it going to be the team that played very well in the first half against a pretty good Pittsburgh defense, or is it going to be the team that almost blew that 18-point lead down the stretch? I want to know which Jacksonville team is going to show up.
So does our buddy Michael from Montreal. I got a good email here, and I wanted to read this one off the top because it has some thoughts similar to what I was thinking during this week. And Michael writes, the Jaguars seem rather similar to the Giants in that they both focus on the run game and their strength is the defensive line. That's the first line he writes, and I agree 100%.
Mm-hmm.
Strong defensive line for Jacksonville. Secondary, a little suspect to me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the same thing with the Giants. And believe me, I've watched enough Giants football my lifetime and this year particularly that I know if you stop that pass rush, and you give that quarterback time to throw, no matter who it is, he's going to pick somebody apart back there.
I agree with you, except when you take Rasheen Mathis into account. I think Rasheen Mathis,
probably better than anybody the Giants have in their secondary.
Exactly. I think Rasheen Mathis is a better defensive, better than average defensive back, a borderline, even at times, Pro Bowl defensive back.
I shouldn't even say but probably. No, he is better than anybody the Giants have back there.
Exactly.
They're running out there with R.W. McCorders and Sam Madison and Jabril Wilson. I can't compare them to Mathis. You're right. However, as a whole, we're talking the secondary as a whole here. And you know as well as I do, if Brady is protected from this big, beefy defensive line, he's going to throw 10 touchdowns. Something ridiculous. If he gets the time, it's going to get ugly.
If he gets the time. And that's, I think, where one of the things that I brought up this week was that you want to look at the Patriots' right side of their offensive line. And you want to see if you can get a gauge on how healthy the right side of that offensive line was. They missed the Giants game. They're out with injuries, both foot and... For the life of me, I can't remember the other one.
You got
a foot and a shoulder. Stephen Neal has had a shoulder injury that's bugged him for the better part of the season. Kizer was out with a foot. And again, Kyle Brady was also out with a foot injury. I think if you get those three guys back, I think that goes a long way toward keeping Brady upright, and it goes a long way toward neutralizing that Jacksonville pass rush.
I'm going to skip around here a bit, not to cut off Michael's email, but he also makes up a point here. I think the Jags will put together a few good drives, but not nearly enough to keep up. So in comparing the two, do you guys think the Jags offense can outperform what the Giants did? And he's going back to week 17. See,
no.
I don't think so.
No.
Now, and you know my thoughts on Eli Manning at times. I've been very hard on him. But I think in a two-minute drill, I'll take Eli Manning.
Over anything that the Jaguars can
And I say that because at times, you know, Manning is so erratic. But they have had comebacks this year, and they've had comebacks on the road. And he has actually performed well in those situations.
I would be interested to see how the Jaguars perform, and I don't know if you can quantify this statistically.
Right.
I would be interested to see how the Jaguars perform under a two-minute situation, how many times they've faced that two-minute situation, and how many times they've cashed in with either touchdowns or field goals in a two-minute situation. I can't imagine the way they're set up offensively. I can't imagine that it's all that frequent.
No, I mean, they're a clock-controlled team. They want to hold the ball for 40 minutes,
and
they want to keep your offense off the field. They probably don't play from behind too much.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're not the 72 Dolphins here or the 07 Patriots, but they probably play from ahead more and then want to run the clock out and keep you off the field. So I think, like you said, they don't have a lot of experience in that regard. You'd have to go back to before halftime. You could look at anything before halftime in the second quarter or anything down the stretch. But a lot of times I'm willing to bet those two-minute drills in the fourth quarter, they're just running out the clock or taking a knee.
They're taking a knee or they're just running it into the
line. They're not trying to go 60 yards in a minute 10.
And they don't really do, at least statistically, I'll admit, I haven't seen a whole lot of them this year, but at least statistically, they don't appear to be the team that's going to air it out, that's going to be able to beat you over the top.
No, and they throw 30 times a game, not even.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think if you literally, you can literally see the way things are going to shake out Saturday night. You probably get a pretty good handle on it right now.
If the Patriots get
up on them by a couple of scores going into the second half, then you're going to see Garrard try and beat you through the air. And then I also think that's where you'll see the pass rush come into play, as Jarvis Green loves to say, it's at that time, it's, you know, it's pin your ears back and just go after the quarterback right then, you know. So I think it's imperative for this Patriots team to get up on them early, to take control of the game early, and that will go a long way toward making Garrard and making the Jaguars a one-dimensional team. And then I think, again, it'll be a long night for Jacksonville if that's the case.
Also, if they have to do that, I don't like the receivers in that team at all.
No. No.
Not at all.
No.
And right now, is there anybody who's a bigger disappointment than Matt Jones? This guy has 6'6". I mean, he's a physical specimen, the wingspan of a pterodactyl, and he's softer than tissue paper.
Well, he's also, to be fair, though, he's learning the game. He's learning a new position at the NFL
level. It's been a couple of years now.
But exactly. I give him the window for that is probably maybe 3 years.
The window is now starting to shut.
Exactly. I mean, that's a good point.
I'm locking the window.
Exactly.
Again,
it's coming down toward the end.
It's on your fingertips. But close the window on your fingers.
But to be fair to him,
I know,
he's had to learn a new position at a new level. So I don't know if it's fair to expect him to be the player, you know, to be a number one wide receiver option.
Well, not
but
a
at
one.
At the same time, exactly, not a number one,
How about
but at
a three?
The same time. Exactly. You still want to see him catch, I don't know, maybe 30 to 40 balls a year?
I think 50 to 60 should be for a guy that size and that speed.
And he's nowhere near that.
No, he's not anywhere close to that. They don't really have anybody close to that.
Mm-hmm.
They really don't. They don't have that one guy. They don't even have a Dante Stallworth right now.
Mm-hmm.
They really don't. And this guy, Stallworth, that gets buried here because they have, you know, six or seven guys who can catch at any moment's notice. The Jaguars don't have that. How are you going to air it out when you don't have, number one, the quarterback who is used to making that many throws, number two, the receivers who can go out there and catch the ball?
Now, if the Jaguars had someone like, let's say if they had Gaffney and Stallworth lining up on the outside for them, I think I would like their chances, even with Garrard. But at the same time, you know, they don't have him. They don't have the wide receiver threat. Garrard is not the kind of guy who's going to air it out. I don't see it. If this game does become, if they do become a one-dimensional team, if they're forced to throw the ball, I don't see it coming out well for Jacksonville.
We're going to switch gears for 2 seconds here. We got some breaking news, courtesy of our buddy Gary Gradecki. Former Red Sox star Jim Rice missed being voted into Baseball's Hall of Fame by 14 votes.
Wow.
As he fell 2.8% below the necessary 75% to gain admission. That means 72.2% is how
votes.
Much he gained.
He missed out by 14 votes.
14 votes.
Let me see if I can guess who got in. Do you have who got in there?
I do not have who got in. Okay. Gary could probably come up with that. He comes up with everything.
We'll hit that later. But Jim Rice.
Not in.
Not in the Hall.
Denied.
Denied.
Gossage better get in.
See, that's the question.
I'm flipping over a table if Gossage doesn't get in.
I think Gossage gets in. But that's.
Yeah. That's neither here nor there.
Exactly. That's a whole nother
story. This is playoff football time.
So he missed it.
He missed out.
He missed it by 14
I thought
votes.
The people listening to the show would probably be interested in that as well.
14 votes.
So God bless him. I got another email I want to read here. We're gonna stay on football this time.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to go back a week, though. Ken in Canton, our buddy Ken in Canton, says, gentlemen, not sure who he's talking to. I don't know if this has been discussed last week, but Pro Football Talk made a big deal of this today. That is the today... This is errors everywhere. I'm reading verbatim. This is the Tony Dungy, Jeff Fisher supposed deal at the end of the Titan Colt game that determined the last playoff spot.
Yeah.
What do you think of that?
I don't care.
Sorry, Browns fans. You should have beat the Bengals. You'd be in the playoffs.
I don't want to say it's much ado about nothing, but I think it's being blown out of proportion a little bit just to the two teams involved, at least for in terms of around here. I don't see it being much of a story.
I mean, my whole thing is the Browns are complaining. Browns fans are pissed off. But you know something? They only have themselves to blame. All they had to do is beat Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can't, they're not even the Bengals. They're going back to being the Bungles again.
If you can't beat Cincinnati when the money's on the table, when a playoff spot is on the line,
you don't deserve to get into the playoffs. They didn't.
Cleveland's a good young team that's doing a lot of good things. They're headed in the right direction. If they re-sign Derek Anderson, that's a whole other question. But I think they're going to get their chance down the road. They blew it this year, though.
I mean, don't get me wrong. If I'm sitting there watching that last game as a Cleveland fan and I see Jim Sorgi in the second quarter, I'm kicking myself in the face.
Yeah.
But I'm also pissed off that my team didn't get it done last week. Mm-hmm. When you take your own destiny out of your hands.
Wait. You're kicking yourself in the face?
I used to take karate. I could actually kick pretty high.
Okay.
I could probably kick myself in the face.
All right. Okay. I'll go with that. I'm sorry. Please continue.
Anyway, Goose Gossage is in the Baseball Hall of Fame.
Goose Gossage.
Only the fifth relief pitcher elected to the Hall, earning baseball's highest honor Tuesday on his ninth try on the ballot. Gossage appeared on 86% of the ballots.
Who else got in? Is that it?
That's all I got.
I got
four paragraphs from Gary Gredecky.
Wow.
Comes through as always.
Jim Rice
so,
didn't
to
get
answer your question, Rice out, Gossage in, Chris Price in, Mike Parenti in. We got a lot going on today. We're going to take a quick break, though, before we do so. Get back to some more emails, back to some more playoff football.
Web
listening
radio.
To the Patriots Playbook.
Webradio@patriots.com.
Give us an email. We'll be back.
When you got a lineman-sized hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac-A-Tac sausages, first down Franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and hot Sac-A-Tac sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down Franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine and Associate Grocers of New England and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
All right, Jimmy, it's the big day, and we gotta go. Patriots kick off in an hour. Let's make sure we got everything.
All right, let's see. Face paint.
Check.
Helmets.
Check.
Foam fingers.
Check.
Jerseys.
Check.
Checks.
Check.
Check card.
Check.
That's everything.
Let's go, Pats!
Woo!
Let's go, Pats! Let's go, Pats! Let's go!
Check, check, check. That's right. If you really are a true Patriots fan, then you need to open a New England Patriots checking account from Bank of America today. You'll get checks, check cards, and even bank statements, all with the official New England Patriots logo. Bank of America is the official bank of the New England Patriots. So take advantage of this opportunity to make every day game day.
Let's go, Pats!
Woo!
And sign up for a New England Patriots checking account today. Bank of America. Bank of Opportunity.
Bank of America N.A. Member FDIC. New England Patriots trademarks, including the Patriots logo, are the property of New England Patriots L.P. and are used pursuant to a licensing agreement with New England Patriots L.P. 2007 Bank of America Corporation. All rights reserved.
He's been a three-time champion, two-time Super Bowl MVP, and kicked off 2007 on a record pace.
Three touchdown passes in the first half.
Now, Tom Brady has signed official Patriots mini replica helmets, and you can get one free. Exclusively from the New England Patriots, this authentic mini helmet comes complete with chin strap, face mask, and Tom Brady's autograph. Perfect for every Patriots fan. To take advantage of this incredible one-of-a-kind offer, all you need to do is make qualifying transactions on your Bank of America Patriots Extra Points Visa card. Plus, with your card, you'll earn Patriots Extra Points redeemable for once-in-a-lifetime Patriots experiences, pregame field passes, memorabilia, merchandise, tickets, and much more. Don't wait. Apply at PatriotsExtraPoints.com or call 1-800-NFL-9929 to get your Bank of America Patriots Extra Points Visa card and a free official mini replica helmet autographed by Tom Brady. Patriots Extra Points, because fans want contact, too. Autographed mini helmet limited to those making a qualifying purchase. See details at PatriotsExtraPoints.com.
Welcome back to Patriots Playbook. I am your guest host, Mike Parenti, and I'm going through puberty right now, as you can just hear that. I apologize. Chris Price is in the co-pilot's chair today.
How you doing?
I don't think the Patriots will change their approach.
That's good. I don't feel so bad now. I'm doing all right. I'm doing a little bit better after that sound clip, actually. It's good to be back here. It's been a couple of months. Last time you were in the seat opposite me as well. Yep. We had a pretty good show. We're going to have a good one today. We're already off to a great start.
You have a knack for picking really good co-hosts.
Yeah, I do, don't I?
It's either me or Buddy.
It's always a successful author. Speaking of which, we've got some great news on the Chris Price book, Chris. Let's hit us with the news.
Well, some of you guys out there know that I put together a book called The Blueprint. It's about the history of the Patriots with a specific look at the last 4 or 5 years and how they've been able to do what they've been able to do. And we got some good news today. We are go for a paperback, win or lose, in the Super Bowl. You know, no matter what happens over the next month, the paperback will be released sometime next summer with a new ending, with another 5,000 to 10,000 words. So if you bought a copy, go out, get yourself another one, get yourself a free book. Makes a great gift. Currently available, Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, all sorts of great bookstores.
Is this like Wayne's World 2 when they had the Scooby-Doo ending? You got to, like, do a different scenario? Yeah,
exactly. Well, no, it's going to be... It's going to be a choose-your-own-adventure book, I think, this time.
Oh, sweet. So yeah. Randy Moss drops the 60-yard touchdown.
If you want to pass to page Randy Moss, yeah. Turn to page 85. If you want to pass, you want the screen pass to Kevin Falk, turn to page...
That's 40. A cool idea, because I had one of those for Batman, and I always killed him in the end.
Choose-your-own-adventure.
I did not choose a good path for Batman. I felt bad about that. So you're bringing paperback.
Yep, paperback. I just got that.
You like that?
I like that.
You should make a billboard and put that up. Chris Price is bringing paperback.
Yeah, my mug would not move a whole lot of books, so... Mm. But that's
why you're an author.
Exactly.
that's not nice.
And that's why I'm on the radio as opposed to...
That's not nice. I'm sorry. Playoff football, folks. We got another email. This one says, did any of you see the segment on the NFL Network show, NFL Game Day, in which Deion Sanders says he thinks the Jaguars are going to beat the Patriots no problem? Seriously! Rich Eisen then clarified that he didn't say that the Jaguars would have a shot, and Deion said he doesn't think they have a shot, he thinks they will do it. Come on now, is he that stupid?
Well, Deion usually, I'm usually a fan of his studio work. I think he's actually underrated, I think he's pretty good in studio. I'm not sure what he's thinking this time, though, and he's not the only one. There's a lot of guys out there. There's a lot of folks in the national media, a lot of TV talking heads who believe that the Jaguars, and I saw a story in USA Today the other day where Jaworski said he believes the Jaguars have the best chance at knocking off the New England Patriots.
Hmm.
Now, and that, you know, that's throwing everyone else.
I just don't see it.
That throws Indianapolis, Dallas.
Yeah, I mean, come on.
That's everybody.
Colts had a 10-point lead in the fourth quarter. Can you tell me they don't have the best shot?
They're
the last team to beat them.
It's two teams. It's the Patriots and the Colts.
Yeah, I agree.
There are two teams right now, and everyone else is playing for second or third place.
The irony of this is the email comes from our friend Devon, who writes, Deion Saunders is a mindless idiot. All right. I appreciate the email, though, Devon.
I like Deion, though. I'm usually a fan of his.
Listen, you know what? I'm sure these guys who regularly host this show get a lot of emails about this. Did you hear what this guy said? Did you hear this guy in this show? Listen, these guys don't even believe half of what they say.
Mm-hmm.
This stuff is taken to have a different opinion. If you had five guys sitting around the table all saying, I think the Pats are going to win easily all three games, then shut the show down.
No one's going to watch.
No one's going to watch.
Yeah.
This stuff is just a ploy. You got to get some kind of conversation and debate going. I don't understand getting so bent out of shape because some analyst doesn't think your team's going to win.
But that's what people – that's what this team and a lot of these fans have done for the last 5, 6, 7 years, though. They've taken slights, either perceived or real, and run with them.
Oh, 2 out of the 50 ESPN football analysts think the Pats might lose a game.
I know.
Now I gotta, like, you know, I gotta break out the rosaries here.
Well, everyone who did power rankings this year, you know, everyone does power rankings. ESPN.com, Fox Sports, you know, every newspaper, every website, everyone does power rankings. And Merrill Hodge had the Steelers as the number one team going into last week.
That is kind of funny.
The Steelers ahead of the Patriots. So I don't know if it's worth it. I agree with you. I don't know if it's worth it to get worked up over what everyone says and their approach. And I don't.
People work themselves into a lather over this stuff.
But hey, you know, you remember, your fan is short for fanatic. So
that's cute. That's good. Who'd you steal that from?
I don't know. It was floating around out there somewhere.
Let me get back to this matchup a bit here, and Richard Seymour touched on this afternoon about Vince Wilfork. He was asked about Vince Wilfork and his importance to this defense, and he's going to be a guy to watch on Saturday because of the running game of the Jaguars and what he does at the nose and the season that he has had. This is really where it boils down to. This is like every game, and I always feel this way, every game is won or lost at the line of scrimmage, and particularly this one. If the Patriots can control the line, you stop that running game, I just don't see any scenario where Jacksonville can pull this out. New England is going to have to play a bad game.
Yeah.
They're going to have to really throw a clunker out there to lose this, in my book. I really feel
like also, that. I also think, too, that I think now one of the things, and we can talk a little bit more about this, is that Jacksonville last week against the Steelers had a great evening on special teams.
You know, that's a good
Maurice
point.
Jones-Drew had a great return. Other than the missed kick, I think it was a 46-yarder that Scobie missed wide right. They had a very good evening on special teams. Jones-Drew had the great return. They had an average start. Their average starting field position was at their own 39, which is extraordinary.
Well, you need that in this game.
Yeah, I mean, and I think one of the things, if Jacksonville is, if they do want to come in here and hopefully try and pull the upset, is they need to have another great night on special teams. I think that also figures into the picture as well. I don't know if that's going to happen, but at the same time, I think that's one of the things that Jacksonville needs to count on, as well as an outstanding night from Jones-Drew and Taylor and Garrard and all of the skill position players. But I think special teams is going to figure into it if they are going to be successful in this game.
Well, as long as Moss doesn't get any excessive celebration penalties and they kick off from the 10, then they're going to be okay probably. But Jones-Drew did have a big return in last year's game.
He did. He had a big return in the game. He also had a run for, I believe, 75 yards.
It was a real fluky play, if you remember that.
Where they thought he was down. I think Tully Bantakane.
Yes.
Tully Bantakane thought he had tackled him. They thought they'd heard the whistle. He wasn't down, and he ended up ripping off, I think it was a 75-yard run.
It was crazy. It was a real odd game last year.
Yeah. It was a Christmas Eve game, and then the Clint Ingram's spear, borderline spear on Tom Brady.
That's right. I remember the spear.
There was a lot of stuff like that in that game, kind of a lot of odd, bizarre, fluky plays. Added to the fact that it was played on Christmas Eve, I think, you know, you figure that into the mix. It was an odd afternoon of football last year.
All I remember from that game is getting up at 3 in the morning on Christmas to drive Mikey Reese and Chris Gaspar of the Boston Globe to the airport. So that was one of the great holiday memories.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Hey, let me ask you something. How far back can you go for bulletin board material?
What's the statute of limitations on bulletin board material?
Yeah.
I think you can go a couple of years. I think it gets
really?
I think if the context is the same and the same guys are in the same position, I think you can go back a couple of years. I think after a year or two, though, I think it kind of gets a little old and stale at that point.
Well, Paul Spicer does not get old and stale, because we can go back and we remember now. And this story kind of resurfaced when we knew who the opponent was going to be. We knew Jacksonville was coming here on Saturday. And you remember back to the Spygate week, between weeks 1 and 2 of the NFL season, Pats were caught, they got busted, the whole thing unfolded, and it just kind of came down to this organization. And Paul Spicer had some pretty strong opinions. And I will read to you what Paul Spicer said at the time. Do like the NCAA and kick them out of the playoffs or something. Put them on probation. They can't go to no playoff games.
Take away their scholarships.
Roger Goodell has definitely enforced some new rules. He's been hard on players. Now let's see how hard he's going to be with a team.
Come on.
All right, a little much, you know, a little much. I mean,
a little much?
Listen, I've been as big a proponent of this as anybody of having to punish this team for what happened. You broke a rule, you pay the price. Bottom line, I don't care what you think the rule is or what your interpretation is or if it's a big deal or not. If it's in the books, it's in the books for a reason. You break it, you get caught, you get penalized. But to kick them out of the playoffs, I mean, this isn't like the NCAA where, you know, they try to tell us that UMass didn't go to the Final Four at Marcus Camby. But no, they did. I saw it. Young guys just strike people's names out of the record books.
I would be interested to see what the context of that quote was in, though. I know that a lot of guys talked.
What the hell the context could that be?
No, well, hold on, hold on. I think if we saw them talk, if we saw, I think it's very important in this situation. First of all, I think it's a stupid comment. But I think if we saw him talk and we saw the context in which it was delivered, because in the wake of Spygate, a lot of guys talked, and we bring it up later in the year, but at the time, and I can specifically remember a couple of guys in the Philadelphia Eagles, were clearly tongue-in-cheek in their approach. And I'm wondering if a guy is saying, be like the NCAA and put him on probation, you know, throw him out of the playoffs, I'm wondering if he's trying to be tongue-in-cheek. However,
no, I don't think he is. He came back.
Exactly. Yesterday on ESPN2, and I know this in Spicer's case. I'm just saying this in Spicer's case.
Well, just
case.
For Spicer specifically.
Exactly.
Right.
I don't know of anyone else. He came back on ESPN2, and he was clearly very serious about it and said, I stand by my comments. You know, if they want to take that and run with it, well, let them.
Well, here's the thing, though. You can read into his most recent comments any way you want. I don't regret saying what I did. I'm a man of my word. I always speak my mind, and that's what I felt at the time. Okay, well, is that what you feel now? Did anybody follow up and ask that? The crack staff at ESPN2's First Take.
No.
Did Dana Jacobson come back with an appropriate question? How do you feel now?
No.
Okay. Well, then, that's an incomplete quote to me. That opens the door for any interpretation possible. But go back to what he said at the time. This ain't news. I've heard it in the past. They finally got caught. The Patriots got caught. They're busted. There's no other. He's not joking around there.
He's not joking around.
He's not doing the moonwalk and wearing a clown suit while he's saying it. I don't care if there's no video. There's audio. It's written. I mean, he says he said it. Is it that big a deal to you? I mean, it's a stupid kind of thing to say, but.
One of the things for me is, and I never, ever, I clearly don't understand this.
Obviously, I don't understand either.
But I want to talk about this going forward. Why do teams continue to do this?
Right.
Why don't coaches who face the Patriots insist on going to their team the week of that game and saying, look, shut up.
Shut up.
Just please, don't say anything.
They shouldn't have to, though.
That's going to be perceived as bulletin board material. Because even the slightest thing, we know this from being around here, is going to get blown up. Is going to get taken completely out of proportion. The slightest misstep, the slightest verbal misstep, is going to get completely blown up. Why do teams continue to do this, though? Why do teams, when they play the Patriots, continue over and over and over again to stick their foot in their mouth?
Probably stupidity is a big part of it. But let me ask you this. Number one, the coach shouldn't have to say anything. These are adults, okay? Even the youngest of players is 21, 22. It's old enough to not say something. So you have 4 days of media availability, right?
Mm-hmm.
Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday.
Yeah.
Half the time, you're probably going to be floating around the facility. You're going to be in the workout room. You're going to be getting your ankle taped. Maybe you speak for 2 days. You can't avoid saying something dumb at the age of 21 for 2 days.
How has this team been able to do it, though? How have the Patriots been able to do that? Now, the Patriots celebrate. They spend plenty of time celebrating after the fact. You know, I can point to several instances where they've celebrated after the fact.
Oh, they're doing the Sean Merriman lightning dance all
exactly.
over San Diego.
Maybe excess. But why have the Patriots been able to do that? In the weeks leading up to big games, you never hear that coming from this franchise. You never hear this franchise providing bulletin board material for another team.
You stumped me. You got me.
They're able to do
Probably because the coach says don't do it.
The coach says shut the you-know-what up.
Yeah. Hell?
Well, close enough. Close enough. I don't know where I'm
saying. Let me ask you this, though. Again, let's go back. Did the Redskins say anything before the Redskins game here?
No.
He dropped 52 on poor old Joe Gibbs.
Yeah.
Poor defenseless old man Joe Gibbs.
That's all about playing 60 minutes, man.
Belichick has a man crush on Greg Williams. He scored freaking 6 touchdowns in 6 drives against Buffalo.
That was more about playing 60
minutes.
Okay,
we're playing 60 minutes of football.
And about finishing the game. We've seen the video now this year of Belichick on the sidelines, especially in the Indianapolis game, screaming. Not talking to his team. Screaming at his team. 60 minutes.
I'm just teasing. I agree with that philosophy. I think you should score whenever you have the ball.
Yeah.
Believe me. But I'm just saying... Is it extra motivation?
They seem to make it work.
I mean, this team seems more self-motivated than any team I've ever seen.
But that's one of the things, though. Honestly,
so
Mike,
then why is this a big deal?
That's one of the things that makes them great.
Right.
I think that's one of the things that makes them as successful as they are, that they take these things, even though they're on top. Even though they're 16-0,
yeah.
you can bet for damn sure that that quote has made its way into the New England locker room, and they're completely aware of what Paul Spicer said, and they're using it as grist for their mill. They're using it as fuel
grist
for their fire going forward, heading into this game. That's why this team is able to get as jacked up as they are week after week after week, because so many teams come in here and are able to just say the wrong thing at the wrong time. I'm not saying it's the only reason, but I'm saying when it comes to motivating, when it comes to Belichick motivating his team, it certainly helps.
Let's see how smart you are right now.
Okay.
What is grist?
Grist? I have no idea what grist is.
Ah!
But I'll say this. I know it's a, I know there's a certain.
It goes in a mill. Are you going to tell me?
Yeah. No, there's a grist mill.
Right. I never understood.
It powers the mill, I guess.
I should know because I've worked in mill towns. As, like Woonsocket, Rhode Island, Pawtucket, mill towns.
How about this? As fuel for their engine.
Okay.
As fuel for the fire, as another log on the, it puts another log on the fire. As we've heard the coach say,
the fire, the hay is in the barn.
Several times,
I like that. I like that. That's a good Belichick line.
There you go. The hay is in the barn.
As his father used to say, the hay is in the barn. That's his quote when he talks about sleeping well on Saturday nights before big games.
Yep.
Like I've already done all the work. The hay is in the barn.
He's in the barn.
Close the door. Go to sleep.
I just it continues to astound me as to why opposing teams insist on doing this more often than not. I'm not going to lump every single team into a group, but more often than not, opposing teams insist on providing extra motivation for the Patriots. And I'm not saying it's the only reason that the Patriots are able to go out and win. That'd be silly and stupid. But at the same time, it certainly helps when it comes to motivating.
Tom Brady today was named the, again, my God.
You got to get another Diet Pepsi.
I need a Ricola. Anywho, Tom Brady, the league's most valuable player, the Associated Press 2007 Offensive Player of the Year, added to his trophy case this afternoon, and I think the guys before us were talking a bit about that. And Randy Moss was voted second. Now, this is like...
I thought you were going to say that the guy from the Sports Exchange voted for Brett Favre.
Did he?
No, I don't. It was a lousy joke on my part. I'm sorry.
It didn't work.
No, I'm sorry.
Just make fun of my voice again.
Okay.
People like that stuff. This is kind of like the chicken or the egg question. You know, is it Moss? Is it Brady?
Mm-hmm.
To me, it seems obvious who the guy was. Was there any doubt in your mind if it could have been Moss, could have been Brady for MVP or AP Offensive Player of the Year? Is there any flip-flop in there? Did you have any sort of...
I think at the start of the year, you could make a real good argument for Moss. But I think now, at this point, it's, this is perfect. We got a definition for grist.
Hey!
Grain to be ground. Ground grain meal produced from grinding. A quantity or lot. Thank you, Gary. Grist, this is grist for the mill. This is
grain
perfect.
To be ground?
I think at the start of the year, you could have made an argument for Randy Moss's MVP.
Right.
I think, and it's really interesting to me that no wide receiver has ever won the award. I think you could have made a real good case maybe halfway through the season with the numbers that he was putting up that Randy Moss was the MVP, was the most valuable player for this, not only for this team, but for the NFL. But as the year went on and the numbers dropped off, and believe me, I'm not disrespecting Randy Moss in this regard, but as the year continued on and the numbers kind of dropped off a little bit, I think it's clear that at least for me, for my money, Brady kept those numbers at a fairly respectable level. They didn't drop off too much. I think it was clear for me that, you know, Brady...
But, I mean, outside of the touchdowns, what makes Moss more valuable than Welker?
He demands attention. Okay. On the field.
But there have been plays, the Giant game in particular, the game-winning touchdown was a play where they doubled up Welker. And Moss was free. So, I mean, it can go both ways.
It can go both ways. I think,
probably doesn't as much, though.
However, more often than not, it's Randy Moss that demands the attention. We saw the great quote from Romeo Crennel earlier in the year. When it comes to defending the Patriots, at least in the passing game, you really have to pick your poison.
Right.
And you either have to choose Randy Moss or you have to choose everyone else.
Oh, if you're stupid like the Giants, you choose the 65-yard touchdown over the 11-yard pass for the first down. But I digress.
But I think Moss demands constant attention whenever he's on the field. You have to have someone on him at all times. And I'm not saying you don't have to do that with the other receivers, but if you leave Randy Moss alone, even in single coverage, it's going to be a long day.
Who's going to stop Moss on Saturday?
Probably Rasheem.
Who's going to
try to stop Moss is probably going to be Rasheem Mathis, I would think.
See, I have this problem. This is a big week for the offensive line. We go back to our discussion on controlling the line of scrimmage. And now we know this Jacksonville front is very physical, very big, strong, strong, powerful front. How do you like this matchup here? This offensive line, which I think has done a great job, and Pat, we have to look at the numbers of how many times Brady's gone down and been sacked, but I think he's been protected pretty damn well this year.
I think if the right side of that offensive line is completely healthy,
they're
at 100%, I don't think it's going to be an issue at all. I think, however, if they have to mix and match maybe with Hochstein and Ryan O'Callaghan, I think that it could get a little dicey at times. Again, we said this before, too. I think that Kyle Brady is going to play a large role in this. I think if Kyle Brady is healthy, he's your best blocking tight end. I think if Kyle Brady's healthy, he's going to take an awful lot of snaps.
He's like the sixth offensive lineman.
He really is. He really is, and he's done a very good job this year when it comes to providing coverage, when it comes to providing protection for Brady. Right now, I'm going to look up the number of sacks.
Yeah, I want to get a read on that. You know, as I told you before the show, I once referred to Kyle Brady as beefy in a story. Beefy tight end, Kyle Brady. He's a big guy. And you're right, though. He's going to play a big role on Saturday trying to block that front. Because Jacksonville, again, much like the Giants, they generate most of the pass rush from the front four. It's not the linebackers.
Yeah.
You know, it's not. They don't have that kind of system where they have an Adalys Thomas or Roosevelt Colvin. And obviously, he's on IR right now. But I'm talking in general specifics where they have guys who can rush from the outside. This is all generated from the front.
Much of the bulk of Jacksonville's pass rush comes from their front four. Comes from their defensive linemen. Does not come from their linebackers. They don't ask their linebackers to do a lot. Their linebackers do have a very physical game, and they play a very physical game, and we've heard that about a half a million times this week. But the bulk of their pass rush does come from their down linemen.
Well, I'll say this. I know Belichick's not blowing smoke when he's talking about Fred Taylor and Jones-Drew, but with the linebackers, I don't see it. Mm-hmm. Not a big fan of this Jacksonville linebacker core. I'm not going to lie to you. What do you got here for the numbers for me?
Brady's been sacked 21 times this year on 578 passing attempts.
I mean, that's great.
So those are phenomenal. Very, very good numbers. And it's no surprise. I mean, we sit here and we talk about the offensive line maybe needing some help from the right side, but at the same time, we have to talk about the fact that three of their offensive linemen are going to the Pro Bowl.
Yeah.
And Logan Mankins is, I don't know, we talked about Matt Light a little bit, but, Logan Mankins is clearly maybe one of the two or three best left guards in the NFL right now.
I agree. I think it's long overdue for some of these guys to get some recognition. I mean, I think a lot of times we look at this offensive line as this lunch pail group, this blue-collar group of guys, and they do have a lot of camaraderie, a lot of cohesiveness. We tend to look at them as just a unit instead of individuals. And you start to break down individual performances, and you start to notice where guys are Pro Bowl worthy. Mm-hmm. And they've had that this year, and the protection's been amazing.
One of the really easy ways to do that is to look at to see who gets beat for sacks.
Right.
You know, more often than not, the guys who are getting beat from sacks are coming from the outside. The speed rushers against the team.
That's tough.
Who give everyone trouble. The Dwight Freeneys and the Jason Taylors and the Aaron Schobles, those guys give everyone trouble. So I'm not trying to directly impugn Matt Light or Nick Kazier here or anything, but the majority of sacks that have come have come as a result of coming off the edge, those speed rushers. Very few of those sacks have come off the middle.
Yeah, it depends on who you're playing, too.
Yeah.
You play guys who generate their pass rush from the outside, you're going to get that. You play a team like this, you may not get as much on the outside. You may get some stuff up the middle. You get some safety blitzes. It depends. These guys come up the middle. It's tough to gauge, and I've been hard on Matt Light in the past, but I do admit, the guys he struggles with are Pro Bowl caliber.
Exactly.
I mean, it's Jason Taylor. I mean, these guys aren't slouches here either.
Yeah, we've debated this too. And a lot of other reporters, and not just the two of us, but a lot of other reporters have debated Matt Light's worth to this team, his overall worth to this team. But at the same time, the guys that he struggles with are the Pro Bowl guys.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not struggling against, John Q. Sixpack coming off the edge. He's struggling against the number one guys. He's in pretty good company. Don't forget, by the way, email address, webradio@patriots.com.
Yeah, we're kind of lagging here. I want some emails. I want some feedback from the
web
fans.
webradio@patriots.com. Send us an email. Let us know what you're thinking.
Hey, we do have one, though.
Buzzman.
Our buddy Buzzman says, guys, how do you think Brandon Merriweather is looking these days? His skin looks good. I think he's cleared up a bit using a new facial soap. I don't know. I haven't heard much about his progress other than what Coach said last week, which was not bad. What do you think? What do you think of Brandon Merriweather?
I think Merriweather's been put in a real tough spot. He's the only rookie on this team.
That kind of sucks. Going it alone here.
Exactly. You're really going it alone. It's not like you're on a fairly young team. He's also at a position where they're fairly, I'm not going to say well-stocked, but they're pretty well off in the defensive backfield. I don't think that you can gauge Brandon Merriweather on this year. I think he has 16 tackles this year. He's actually, honestly, I don't know if I'd give him a passing grade in this regard. He does have a couple of pass defenses, but that's only because he dropped the balls.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't. It's not exactly like he's jumping up to try and bat, you know, bat passes down.
I got to give it an incomplete.
Yeah, it's tough.
I haven't seen enough.
It's tough. At this stage of his career, you know, one of the greatest things that Anthony Pleasant ever said, I interviewed him once a few years ago when he was here, says it takes 3 years for a player to really get his feet under him when it comes to playing in the National Football League.
Right.
So after 1 year on this team with limited snaps, I'm not ready to make a declaration, a full-out declaration on Brandon Merriweather just yet. I think he's about where they hoped he would be. I think he is a nickelback. I think he's or not a nickelback, but he's assisted in nickel coverage. He hasn't blown a lot of coverage this year, and that's a good thing. We haven't heard his name called, and I think that's a good thing. I think he's still learning. I think he's going to be around next year. I think one of the things, and I'll just close with this thought, I think Merriweather's future in a lot of ways is going to be determined by how the Patriots go about their business in the offseason.
Yeah.
If they do not re-sign Asante Samuel or Randall Gay, both guys who are going to be free agents this year, I think Merriweather could very likely have his shot on this team. However, if those two guys come back, or even if one of them comes back, he gets bumped down the depth chart a little bit. If Eugene Wilson doesn't come back next year, I think maybe you see a little bit of Brandon Merriweather in that regard. I think, though, if those guys come back, I think it's going to be another long year for Merriweather. But if they don't come back, I think he's going to see more snaps. I think he's going to get more of an opportunity.
We have another email. Scott from the nation's capital chimes in and says, "Hey, guys. Based on both what you have heard and also what your best guess is, could you please assess the likelihood of Jaguars defenders like Henderson and Mike Peterson playing on Saturday night?" Peterson says he's going to play. He's come out and says, "I'm playing, I'm in." Mm-hmm. I haven't heard anything about Henderson.
I have not heard anything about Henderson either.
Okay.
We are supposed to get, I think we'll get the first injury report today.
That's right. He also asked about that as well.
The injury report should come down at 4 o'clock today.
Usually, though, it
comes down Wednesday, but I think because it's a Saturday game, I think we're going to see
everything's pushed back. He also says that this is potentially a big help to the Patriots' chances. Absolutely. I mean,
yeah.
You take those two out.
Yeah.
Let's be realistic.
Yeah, I know.
Here.
I agree.
Particularly Peterson, because like I said, I'm not a big fan of linebackers to begin with. I like Peterson. Mm-hmm. But as a whole, I mean, they got to have him in there to get some kind of rush,
mm-hmm.
to get something going on back there. Also, quick question about the Giants game. It seemed to me that Asante Samuel was a bit of a non-factor, and it seemed like Ellis Hobbs was covering the Giants' number one receiver, Plaxico Burress, all night. I am not trying to knock Samuel at all. The guy's a legit Pro Bowler. I'm just curious if you saw something similar and what you think of that.
I think I'm pretty sure what the Patriots do is they don't match up man-to-man.
Right.
They'll keep one guy on one side and they'll keep one guy on the other side regardless of the matchups. And I think what the Giants were trying to do was trying to exploit that by going to Burress. Now, a lot of times after going back and watching the game, first time through, I was a little bit hard on Ellis Hobbs in that game. But I think going back and reviewing the tape, watching the game another couple of times, I think Hobbs was maybe not at fault. I think maybe he should have had a little bit more safety help, especially on that first ball down the middle, the 52-yarder to Burress.
Yeah, definitely.
I think that he was left out to dry a little bit by his safeties. But I think that matchup specifically, getting back to the original question, I think that matchup initially was one that was the Giants tried to exploit because of the size also. There's almost a foot differential.
Well, Burress is a tall guy, and yeah, you're talking a lot of wingspan.
There. Yeah, and they were able to get on the ball a couple of times in the red zone. So I think specifically when you're talking about that matchup, I think that was by design the Giants were trying to get Hobbs on Burress as opposed to Samuel.
I agree. It seemed like more what the Giants were doing, not what New England was trying to do defensively.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he had his moments, but overall did a decent job. Mm-hmm. But you got to keep in mind, too, Burress has been banged up all year.
Yeah.
So it's not a bad idea to keep Hobbs on him right now if you are playing that one-on-one matchup.
You know what, too? And I after watching that game and after seeing him in the postseason, Burress may be better than we're giving him credit for.
I thought the guy was a complete dog when they signed him.
Yeah.
Because all I remember was that stupid play where he spiked the ball. And I'm like, this guy's an airhead. But you know what? He plays pretty hard in my book. I've been real impressed with what he's done over the last couple of years as a Giant. I have actually grown to like Plaxico Burress.
He's not.
First time you'll hear me say I have grown to like a player on one of my teams.
He's not as bad as we thought.
Opposite of what I thought. Yeah. I always go in with low expectations to begin with.
Yeah.
But I really went in with not expecting much here, and I think he's turned out pretty well. And, you know, apparently so does Eli Manning because he throws him about, you know, 90 times a game and tries to squeeze everything in there at times. But it's hard not to with a target like that. He's built like Moss in terms of, I mean, obviously he's not Randy Moss, but the height, the body,
he's
the frame.
He's got a long, lean body, exactly.
Same kind of frame.
Yep.
just not the talent.
Yep, I agree.
Also, our friend Scott asked us about Hobbs and Samuel playing on Saturday. It doesn't seem to be any concern there on the injury front. You'll see them both out there, and they're obviously going to need them. So we appreciate the email from you, Scott. We've got a lot more coming up, too, on this show, Chris. A lot more football, hopefully some more emails to get into, and some sound from the locker room.
Nice.
From our buddies Tom Brady, Coach Bill Belichick, and a various assortment of players. But before we do that, we're going to take another quick break. Come back on the other side. You're listening to Patriots Playbook with Chris Price and Mike Parenti.
When you've got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, first down Franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Miles and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down Franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Food Master, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's, and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine, and Associate Grocers of New England, and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
All right, Jimmy, it's the big day, and we gotta go. Patriots kick off in an hour. Let's make sure we got everything.
All right, let's see. Face paint.
Check.
Helmets.
Check.
Foam fingers.
Check.
Jerseys.
Check.
Checks.
Check.
Check card.
Check.
That's everything.
Let's go, Pats!
Woo!
Let's go, Pats! Let's go, Pats! Let's go!
Check, check, check. That's right. If you really are a true Patriots fan, then you need to open a New England Patriots checking account from Bank of America today. You'll get checks, check cards, and even bank statements, all with the official New England Patriots logo. Bank of America is the official bank of the New England Patriots. So take advantage of this opportunity to make every day game day.
Let's go, Pats!
Woo!
And sign up for a New England Patriots checking account today. Bank of America. Bank of Opportunity.
Bank of America N.A. Member FDIC. New England Patriots trademarks, including the Patriots logo, are the property of New England Patriots L.P. and are used pursuant to a licensing agreement with New England Patriots L.P. 2007 Bank of America Corporation. All rights reserved.
He's been a three-time champion, two-time Super Bowl MVP, and kicked off 2007 on a record pace.
Three touchdown passes in the first half.
Now, Tom Brady has signed official Patriots mini replica helmets, and you can get one free exclusively from the New England Patriots. This authentic mini helmet comes complete with chin strap, face mask, and Tom Brady's autograph. Perfect for every Patriots fan. To take advantage of this incredible one-of-a-kind offer, all you need to do is make qualifying transactions on your Bank of America Patriots Extra Points Visa card. Plus, with your card, you'll earn Patriots Extra Points redeemable for once-in-a-lifetime Patriots experiences, pregame field passes, memorabilia, merchandise, tickets, and much more. Don't wait. Apply at PatriotsExtraPoints.com or call 1-800-NFL-9920. To get your Bank of America Patriots Extra Points Visa card and a free official mini replica helmet autographed by Tom Brady. Patriots Extra Points, because fans want contact too. Autographed mini helmet limited to those making a qualifying purchase. See details at PatriotsExtraPoints.com.
Welcome back to Patriots Playbook. I'm Mike Parenti, your guest host. Flying in my co-pilot's chair is Chris Price, who's enjoying a good laugh at the music, I guess.
Rupert
I'm not sure
Holmes.
What's so funny.
It's an awesome song. It's a great song.
I don't like pina coladas.
If you like pina coladas?
I don't.
Oh, the seed that's...
You know what? And I like getting wet.
Right there.
I don't like getting caught right in the rain.
And don't you like Cape Cod?
No.
It's a weird song, but it's a great song.
I mean, I have a leather jacket, so I don't really want to get caught in the rain.
That's, you know, it'd be mid.
And I'm a Captain and Coke kind of guy, so this whole song doesn't really do it for me at all.
Didn't ring true for you?
Yeah.
I'm a fan. If you like
that's, thanks. Thank you. I'm going to request for the next break some more Phil Collins. We're going to get back to that. And I know Gary can come through with that.
Yeah.
But we have something else for you.
Okay.
We got something even better. We've got linebacker Teddy Bruschi addressing the media today. So we got some good stuff from Teddy. Let's hear it.
You've been in a lot of playoff games.
Yeah.
Is there a legitimate elevation of emotion, pace,
Yeah, I think it not only on game day, but the preparation you have during the week, because I think everyone realizes the finality of the playoffs, that if you don't have good preparation and you don't play well on game day, that's it. That's it. So that definitely comes into play, not just on game day, but ever since, you know, you're in the playoffs.
And you're playing a team that has a terrific band of running backs, which is always, you know, a great challenge for any defense. Can you talk about them and what they bring against your defense?
Yeah, I think as long as Fred's been in the league, you think you'd lose a step a little bit, especially as a running back with all the pounding that you take. But as we watch him on film, he still has that great breakaway speed, and you see him pulling away from linebackers and especially defensive backs and safeties, and they just can't catch him. And so I think he's playing the best type of football he has in his career. I mean, Jones-Drew, a guy that last year we played against him, and we know how legit he is as a running back. We put some good licks on him last year, and he seemed like he was still breaking tackles and falling forward, and he can't be underestimated because of his size. He doesn't have tremendous size. He's a little guy, but he's as tough as they come, and you can see that by the way he runs and gets in the end zone.
From a linebacker standpoint, you stand behind Fitz Wilfork.
Yeah.
And that's a two-part question. What does having him in the middle do for you? What does he enable you to do from a linebacker?
It cleans up a lot of things. Sometimes when during a running play specifically, you'll have a lot of scheme blocks thrown at you, a lot of double teams, a lot of guards coming at you, and if you're not getting good play from your zero technique, it makes it that much more messy, if you know what I'm talking about when I say messy. You know, guys can be coming at you from different angles if the zero technique isn't holding up stout in there. And, of course, Vince, everyone's seen him play this year. It's when is he isn't stout, you know, and he's able to take... What's that?
What do you mean that? 300 and...
Yeah, well, maybe his height helps him too. I mean, he's not one of the tallest guys. I mean, that just helps him with his pad level automatically. But when he gets his hand inside on someone and really gets his arms extended, and he is really strong, that happens a lot of times. I can see which side leverage he has, which side leverage I'm supposed to have, and then, like I said, it cleans a lot of things up for me in there.
From that standpoint, he seems like such a nice young man. How does he get all these penalties?
He's different people. He's two different people. I mean, you see V-Dub with his kids and the way he is with us in the locker room, and really nice, fun-loving guy. Communicates well. I mean, I'm sure you guys love talking to him the way he is with you guys. But when we get that out there on the field, he's one of the fiercest competitors we have, and sometimes too fierce, you know, in terms of being a little bit too aggressive sometimes. And I think he's talked about the fines that he's had and some of the penalties, but that just happens sometimes when you're out there and you're being aggressive, and I'm not going to tell him not to be that way.
Teddy, you played so many playoff games since 96. Do you ever get them mixed up? Do you ever see what you with friends?
We
played Pittsburgh and
possibly sometimes. Yeah, I guess sometimes. You know, I'll ask what year was that. You know, because we've had a lot of success here, but you still remember. I can still point out plays and what the weather was like and where we were and what were the game changing plays in certain games. I think the games you remember most are the ones that are the games when you win, you advance, and the ones that you lost and your season was over.
You talking about preparation?
What's that?
The thing is, Buckley doesn't remember them, and he's never had a concussion.
Maybe it's an effect of other things.
Teddy, you talked about your preparation, how it steps up for this play. Do you find yourself, after all the playoff games you've been in, has it changed at all over the years? Different things you do?
No, I've always believed that when you have games that get bigger and bigger in magnitude, you have to break them down to their simplest form, and that goes down to the preparation from day to day to during the game. What quarter is it in? What situation is it in? What down is this? And what are the team's tendencies on that down? What are my responsibilities? If I just break it down that simply, it sort of helps me forget about the magnitude of if we lose, the season's over, or if we win, we're going to the next round or something like that. I just focus on how to win and how to beat the opponent.
Does this team remind you at all?
More years under your belt, the playoffs is supposed to need more.
Yeah, because that's really my motivation right now for playing. I have no other goal but to win championships, and that's the way it's always been for me. And the playoffs are when you've gotten to that final goal, you've entered a tournament to where there are a handful of teams that are deserving to be there, and which each round you progress in means that your final goal is closer and closer.
Jaguars team remind you all of your teams, and this really started to be a run, and that they were played hard, didn't get a whole lot of recognition outside of their own community and stuff?
Well, our teams early in my career won championships, and right now we're in a divisional round, so I don't want to do any comparisons to any of the previous teams that I was on, because those were special teams that were able to call themselves world champions, so I won't do that.
But do the Jaguars remind you of the same type of, you know, attitude and mentality that you guys had in those teams?
There are similar. I do see similarities in terms of maybe how they approach games, being physical, being aggressive, wanting to be the tougher team, the smarter team, and that's what we pride ourselves on. Also, I've said that even last year, and it goes again this year. They do sort of remind me of us because of the way they approach the game, how they want to just sort of, you know, be the more physical team, and that I think that's what we pride ourselves on. Yes.
Teddy, okay. talking to players yesterday, and the key word seems to be about when it comes to a playoff game, the difference is the pressure. You sort of talked about a little bit one and done. What is the key, and how do you relax and just be able to function with that kind of pressure on you?
Well, I think you dive head first that much even more into your preparation in terms of obviously you will step it up this week, knowing that the finality of the game, you'll watch more film, you'll pay a little bit more attention, more than you usually do. I think it is in the back of your mind that this is the playoffs, and you know, if you don't win, the season's over. So you dive in your preparation even more, and you know, you take it home with you, you do whatever you can, and this is all you focus on every single minute of your day.
The theme that Bill said at the beginning of the year about playing 60 minutes in every game, has that actually almost taken you into playoff mode right from the very beginning of the season?
Yeah, I think him assessing that early in the year, and then us having some of the games that we had. I mean, obviously, in some of the games, we didn't have to play 60 minutes. The score was 52-14 or something like that. We had a number of victories where the margin of victory was great. And him reassessing that towards the end of the year, I think, was very important, which got us to focus on playing full games, which helped us win tough games like Baltimore and Philadelphia and the Giants and things like that. So we've had some games in the last month that basically took 60 minutes, and that I think have gotten us used to playoff football. I think the game versus the Giants was a game that the atmosphere and the way that they played us, the physical defense that they played against our offense, and the way they pounded that ball with on us. I think that's us having to get used to that and get improve on stopping those things and help us going into the playoffs. Yes.
Teddy, you said a few minutes ago your only goal was to win championships. So take it back to '96. What was your goal then? Was it just to make the team, learn the new position, be in a playoff game? What was the goal back then?
Yeah, my goal back then was to learn to play linebacker, you know, and coming out of college and being a defensive lineman, never taking a hook drop in my life. When Coach Groh asked me to drop to the hook, and I asked him where that was, and I knew I had a long way to go. So I think that was my first and foremost step coming into the league. And then the other goal I had was keep myself on the team as best I could with what I could do, being a third down pass rusher and playing special teams. And then as I continued to learn to play that linebacker position, and I realized that I could do that, I said, okay, let's take it to the next level and the next level, and now I'm to the level where I know I can play, and now I just want to keep winning and winning. Okay. Good. Okay, go ahead.
All right, that was Patriots linebacker Teddy Bruschi addressing the media today, and of course Bruschi touched on a number of subjects, including some past playoff glories. Also talked about that Jacksonville running game, which we've been talking about in detail throughout the afternoon. And I wanted to go back and look at the Jaguars season in a bit, and you go to the time when David Garrard got hurt. Mm-hmm. He was out for 3 weeks. Quinn Gray had to step in and start, and I give this team a lot of credit. Really stepped up as a total team effort during those weeks when Garrard was out, and particularly the running game and the defense. You go back, they went to Tampa at the time. Mm-hmm. It was Quinn Gray's first start, first NFL start, first game for Garrard when he was out. They came back, won that game 24-23, had some big plays on defense. They ran the ball well. Drew and Taylor combined for, I want to say, let's say 116 yards. You know, okay. Good effort on the ground. Gray only threw 16 passes. Defense came in, three interceptions against Jeff Garcia. You know, it kind of, you get the impression, and some guys talked about this in the locker room today, of this Jacksonville team having some of the qualities of those old Patriot teams, mm-hmm. going back to like 2001.
On a lot of levels, yeah.
You know, it's this lunch pail group, not a lot of Pro Bowl recognition, although Fred Taylor is in the Pro Bowl now after Willie Parker gets hurt, but mm-hmm. wasn't going to be there.
Yeah.
Despite 1,200 rushing yards.
Which still is a little bit odd to me.
It is odd that he had never made one until this year. Yeah. But you look at the defense and what they've done defensively this year. Garrard, not a Pro Bowl honor. No one on the defensive side of the ball made the Pro Bowl. And they kind of have that mentality where, you know, we don't have a lot of stars or individual superstars, but this is a team. And some guy, you know, someone gets hurt, other guys have to step up, and they did it. They did it that weekend against Tampa Bay. Came back 2 weeks later, won another game behind the defense in the running game. So you get this impression that this, we talk about them being one-dimensional. We know what they do real well. Yet if you have to take something else away, other areas have stepped up this year.
That's true in the past. And again, you know, they haven't done it in the postseason. At least against the Patriots. We've seen them do that against Pittsburgh. I do agree with you. I think there is something to the idea that this team reminds a lot of people a little bit. I'm not going to say a lot, but those 2001, 2002, 2003 Patriots, really more the 01 Patriots, yeah. where they were flying under the radar. You know, no one knew a lot about them. They were kind of this team who maybe kind of came out of nowhere. They're getting a lot of bounces. They're playing very well as a team. One of the things that Kyle Brady said today, Kyle Brady, I think the only former Jacksonville Jaguar currently on the New England roster, is that really is a whole team-wide thing. That's not something that's created by Jack Del Rio.
Right.
That's not something that's created by, you know, kind of one or two guys. They play in a small market. They're not on national TV all that often. They don't get a whole lot of respect, you know, as a result, they don't have a whole lot of Pro Bowlers, and they fly under the radar, and they enjoy that spot. They enjoy kind of being that team that all of a sudden jumps up and bites someone in the rear end. So I think they feed off that. I think they enjoy that. I think they love that underdog mentality. Lord knows they're getting enough of it this week.
You know, 2 weeks later after that game against Tampa Bay, they went to Tennessee against the league's best run defense at the time, racked up 166 rushing yards. Jones, Drew, and Taylor each scored a touchdown. Defense forced three turnovers again.
No, wait a minute. Now let's look at that box score, though. When you bring Tennessee into the mix and you talk about Tennessee, they're two different teams. Tennessee's defense with Albert Haynesworth.
You're right. Haynesworth was out.
Without Albert Haynesworth.
And Travis LeBoy was out.
Okay, so you kind of got to put an asterisk next to that.
Oh, but they've been doing this all year. They've done this to everybody.
But 166 yards, you know what, that's great. But again, let's consider the context of that game. Let's consider the fact that, and we could talk all the live long day about Bob Sanders being the defensive player of the year.
Right.
But for my money, you can put Albert Haynesworth into that conversation.
Oh, you're right.
As well,
he does affect a lot of game plans.
That's two different teams when you get Haynesworth in there, because the Titans can really stop the run, as we saw this weekend against LaDainian Tomlinson, mm-hmm. who ended up with, I don't think, anything more than 40 yards.
No.
But you know, I don't want to go too far off on a tangent there, but they have shown it, but they can run the football. You said there is really one dimension to this team, but it's a really good dimension.
Well, my whole larger point was, number one, being able to come back after being embarrassed by Tennessee earlier in the season, mm-hmm. in week one. That was big for them. They came back, and they stuck it down their throats the second time. Number two, being able to step up again. Garrard's out. Quinn Gray's in there. You don't want him to throw much, so you have to run it. It just seems like when they have to get it done, they find a way. And it goes back to the Pittsburgh game. 4th-and-2. Season's on the line. You got to get it done. You got to get in there. You got to score. Mm-hmm. Get close enough. Scobie kicks the game-winning field goal. You go home. You shock Pittsburgh. They've had that mentality all year, and that does somewhat remind me of these old Patriot teams. Again, like you said, let's not go overboard with that, because this team's never won a championship. They've won mm-hmm. one playoff game in 8 years. We can't start comparing them to a three-time Super Bowl champion. I'm just talking about the intangible qualities. My question is, how much of that really matters? When you're facing a team that's 16-0 and racks up 500 points in a season and about 35 to 40 points a game, I don't care if you've got Captain Intangibles there. It doesn't really make a difference. And I mean Derek Jeter, by the way. Right, Captain Intangibles.
I think in some circumstances, I think it can help you. Mm-hmm. And I think it will certainly help them this Saturday. I don't think it will be enough, though. I don't think it will be enough to get them over the top against this Patriots team, especially, this Patriots team at home. They're undefeated at home in the postseason under Belichick. They're 9-1 as a franchise since 1978 when it comes to playing postseason games. They've beaten teams by an average of 14 points here in the postseason. I don't think it's going to be enough. You know, you can talk about all the intangibles you want, but at the same time, you know, when the rubber hits the road, I don't know if it's going to be enough to make up the difference between the two teams.
Another one. The rubber hits the road.
You know.
The grist in the mill.
Grist for the mill.
Fire for the fuel.
I got a lot of them.
I don't know what's going on there.
I'm just happy to be here. Hope I can help the ball club. One at a time.
I love it.
We got to play him one day at a time.
Come rain or come shine. Stay 100%. I'm just taking it
Stay within yourself.
Web radio at patriots.com.
Hey, good segue.
Well, you know,
good plug. We haven't had an email in a while, guys, so I want our readers and our listeners. And all, if you want to call us, 508-543-7482, please. Give us a call because we're pretty easy to talk to. We'll share some jokes and some, you know, some laughs. We'll have a good time.
So and a little Phil Collins.
A little Phil Collins coming up, too. So we're going to have a lot of things for you. But, you know, again, and you made a good point earlier. I think it was we were talking about the Deion Sanders incident on ESPN or on NFL Network. Not really an incident, but his take on this game. And how a lot of people seem to think, and you said Ron Jaworski was included, that this is the one team that could beat New England in a playoff game.
Mark Schlereth.
Schlereth. Spell that. How do you spell that?
S-C-H-L-E-R-E-T-H, I think. We can look
you didn't say Schlereth at the end. That's
Schlereth.
The spelling bee rules, and you violated him.
Schlereth, though, bottom line, was one of the guys who said that Jacksonville has a good shot at knocking off the Patriots.
A good shot or the best shot?
No, Jaworski said the best shot.
Yeah, see, I don't see it.
Jaworski said the best shot.
How can he not say it's Indianapolis?
And that blew me away, too. Exactly, because, you know, you're figuring every other playoff team into the picture here. You're not just putting, you know, two or three teams. You're putting Indianapolis, you're putting Dallas, you're putting Green Bay, who I think are still better teams than this Jacksonville team. You know, you're putting all those teams in the mix as well.
Well, you're also, you can't worry about the NFC teams. You got to get to the Super Bowl before.
Everyone, he said that Jacksonville has the best shot at knocking off the Patriots in the playoffs.
And, you know, people are forgetting, Indianapolis had a great year. This team, I mean, they lost a game in San Diego they should not have lost. Vinatieri missed an extra point, basically. Mm-hmm. I mean, a chip shot field goal that he hits 99 times out of 100, and they lose that game. That could have been a 15-1 team. Now, the last game they tanked, and they had Jim Sorgi in there, so maybe it's, at worst, a 14-2 team if Vinatieri makes a kick. It just gets lost in the shuffle because of how good New England has been this year. Mm-hmm. But Indianapolis had a great year, a better year defensively than last year when they won the Super Bowl with Bob Sanders for the whole season.
I think this Indianapolis team will go down. If you're a basketball fan, you can appreciate this analogy.
Mm-hmm.
This Indianapolis team might go down as the Atlanta Hawks. Real good team, just picked the wrong time to be good.
Yeah, I mean, maybe, you know, perhaps they come here for the AFC title game and they play a hard, hard-fought game. They don't win. But you look back and say they had a great year.
They did.
And any other year where there's not this 16-0 juggernaut, perhaps they could win a Super Bowl. I don't see how Jacksonville is a step ahead there.
I don't like
San Diego.
No.
But we'll get to that in a second. I want to hear your point first.
The question for me, and we're looking ahead now, we're talking a little bit about Indianapolis, is I don't want to say Marvin Harrison's an X factor, but I think if Marvin Harrison's healthy and they come in here for an AFC championship
big
game,
difference, yeah.
Then I think it's going to make a difference. I don't know if it's going to be the difference that puts them over the top, but I think it will make a big difference, you know, in the way they game plan, the way they scheme, the way they approach this game. But again, we're getting ahead of ourselves. We're talking about an AFC championship game. Want to focus more on the AFC divisional playoffs.
Right. We have to, and again, Indianapolis has to get by San Diego first. I just feel with San Diego, they'll screw it up at some point.
Yeah.
And Turner's going to make a stupid asinine call.
Norv Turner make a stupid call?
He will. He'll go for a field goal at some point when they should go for the first down or something idiotic. And Philip Rivers will do more talking than performing like he's done his entire career. Yeah. It'll unfold. It will unravel on them. Mm-hmm. They did not play a great game against Tennessee. No. They didn't score in the first half.
They scored. They played really in truth. They probably played one good quarter.
They really did. They had a good stretch. And then it just got out of hand.
Yeah.
And then it was like just piling on at that point. And the game was over. And you knew Tennessee was out of it. Whatever they did in the last 4.5, 5 minutes, doesn't really concern me or faze me at all. I just don't really like this San Diego team. I know they're hot going in, and some people seem to think that makes a difference. If you're the hottest team going into the playoffs, maybe that helps.
Well, I think it helps. I think the momentum helps. And
yeah,
again,
well, momentum. One team has won all their games.
Yeah.
They got some.
Yeah.
The team here has got some pretty good momentum, too.
Yeah.
Can we at least acknowledge that?
That's true.
You know?
Yeah, we'll give them that. They've won 16 games. 16 games gives you a lot of momentum.
I will say this. That's the matchup I'm thinking is – I still say it's Indianapolis is going to be New England AFC Championship. I don't know if you have a different take on that.
No.
Think, no,
no
okay.
I
so
don't.
You're
honestly,
flying with me on that here?
I believe that this is at least in the NFL postseason, I think this is a year for favorites. I think with the exception of Jacksonville, the Jacksonville-Pittsburgh game, and you could make an argument, really, that Jacksonville was a better team.
Yeah.
They were favored in that game, so it's not that much of a surprise. But I think really in the postseason this year, it's a year for favorites. I don't think we're going to see a whole lot of upsets. I think the four best teams, without a doubt, right now, are New England, Indianapolis, Dallas, and Green Bay.
Yeah.
Not so much in that order, but I think those are your four teams.
Yeah.
Those are the four teams that should be playing a week from Sunday in their respective conference championship games.
Yeah, it's funny because they always give that same line about this is the year for the favorites. Every year when I fill up my March Madness pool, I just can't see this one seed getting beat. And every year it's like a 10 seed and a 9 seed in there.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's. But I agree with you. I think maybe in the NFC on that side of the docket, maybe Seattle has a shot at Green Bay.
You know, if everything falls together perfectly for
so
Seattle,
it's gonna be
but
like
I just
a,
don't
a,
see
a,
it happening.
An eclipse and a,
yeah, you just need to, you know, well, first of all, you need to have Matt Hasselbeck not come out and say, we're going to get the ball and we're going to score,
yeah.
Because that'll jinx it right off the bat. That's a stupid decision. I think if the game was being played in Seattle, I think Seattle would have an excellent shot at that.
Oh, absolutely.
But at the same time, it's not being played in Seattle.
If it were being played in Seattle, then Seattle would be one of the top seeds, and they'd be one of the four best
teams,
and we'd be talking about that. So
that's true.
No, I mean, Green Bay is there and hosting that game for a reason.
Yeah, and Green Bay should win that game. You know, I have feelings about Brett Favre aside. Green Bay should win that game. They're a better team than Seattle, who I think really got a lot of good plays at just the right time. You know, to beat Washington. I think that they were a little bit lucky to beat Washington. And I think Dallas is clearly, though, the best team in the NFC. I
would have to agree. I'm going to play the Tom Casale role and pick the opposing team.
Uh-huh.
But I will have to go with the Cowboys in this game. I don't see the Giants matching up all that well.
As long as Tony Romo stays away from Jessica Simpson, that two-week stretch leading up to the Super Bowl, they'll be okay.
So you already got them in the Super Bowl.
Well, if they get that far, I shouldn't even do that.
Aren't they already like vacationing right now?
They were on a Mexican vacation, which threw the entire state of Texas into a frenzy. Apparently, on the bye week, they went away together to Mexico, and Cowboy fans everywhere completely lost their minds.
She's hot too.
You know, the Texan fans. And I don't mean Texan Houston Texan fans. I mean Texas football fans.
Uh-huh.
They love their football.
Yeah,
I mean this is like life and death for them.
It's like baseball is up here,
and you find out your quarterback is out in Mexico gallivanting with Jessica Simpson. Number one, you probably wish that was you. And you say, good for you. Number two, you're like, I hope you brought your playbook.
Jackpot.
I don't think he brought his playbook.
No.
No. So, no. I mean,
You know what, though? But we talk about that. We talk about that in the Romo-Simpson relationship. Obviously,
stupid-ass story.
Though. Exactly. But she showed up at that game. He had a lousy game. But at the same time, we go through that here in New England. You know, you saw the pictures after the Giants game. Of Tom and Giselle out in the town in New York City.
Yeah, well, they won.
Exactly, but there's the big difference.
So no one cares. Brady wins every week.
We're talking about nonsense here.
Not the game. Not the game. We're talking about dating.
Let's get back to the important stuff. Let's get back to
like what, Jessica Simpson?
Let's get back to breaking down the postseason picture. Because again,
not a game.
That I would die for. Practice.
Yeah,
let's get back to the important stuff right now. Because this is literally, like we said at the top of the show, this is the best time of year.
Yeah, of course.
If you're a football fan, this is a great time of year, especially if your team is in this. If your team is in, as Bill Parcells likes to say, the tournament. This is the best time of year for you. Like Seymour said yesterday, let's fast forward to this. You know, let's get the entire regular season out of the way. If he could fast forward to this, he would. That's one of the things he said. I think it's great. I think this is, if you're a football fan in particular right now, if you're a Patriots fan, this is a great time of year.
Yeah, it's funny. There's a lot of pressure on the team this year. I think more so in the past because of the 16-0.
There is, but
there's this pressure to validate what you did in the regular season, and you don't want to blow it. Because if you lose on Saturday, you blow it. But let me ask you a question. Right now, we look at it, we say, okay, as it stands right now, 16-0, I still don't put it ahead of 14-0 in a Super Bowl, and a total of however many Miami won, that was 17-0 total. Okay. Since they still got there and won, I give them the edge right now. But what does it take for you? Is there anything other than a Super Bowl that could vault them ahead of the 72 Dolphins?
No.
No. Even if they go to the Super Bowl lose?
I think at this point you need to be...
You got
to
do it all.
You need to finish it off. You need to win the last three.
It's got
to
be 19-0.
It's got to be 19-0, or we're going to hear Mercury Morris for 2 weeks straight. We're going to hear Mercury Morris 2 weeks straight anyway, leading up to the Super Bowl if these guys get that far. Talking all sorts of nonsense.
You know, I'll tell you. I don't think I'll be there this year.
Uh-huh.
And I'm kind of glad now, because I don't want to write about Mercury Morris.
It's going to be nothing but Mercury Morris.
I don't want to hear it.
It's going to be nothing but Mercury
Morris. It was funny the first, like, 5 or 10 times he was on ESPN and everything, and I got a kick out of it then, but it's gotten stale.
But I think they need to finish it off. I think if they want to be considered right up there with the 72 Dolphins, I don't think going 17-1 or 16-1 or 18-1 is going
to
do it.
No, it's like, that's like coming up with a great tuxedo and you got your corsage and your flowers and you're going to the prom and the car stalls.
And you're wearing sneakers.
Yeah. Yeah, you wear sneakers.
Yeah.
I know a kid who wore sneakers to a semi-formal.
That's not.
Now, granted, it's semi-formal, but he had khakis and sneakers.
It's not that semi.
No.
It's
people kind of bend the rules of what semi-formal means.
Yeah.
There's a common sense code of ethics that goes in there.
You talked about this team feeling a little bit of the pressure.
Yeah.
In feeling a little bit like there's a little more pressure on this team now than there was in 01, 03, or 04.
Well, clearly.
There is. But at the same time, column I wrote today for PatriotsDaily.com, that's PatriotsDaily.com, there was a piece that I did today for PatriotsDaily.com that talked about how this team is dealing with that.
Right.
And this team, at least over the last couple of days, was fairly loose and was fairly laid back. There was a lot of joshing. You know, there was Tom Brady giving Wes Welker crap about his height in the press conference yesterday.
What about his porn stash? Did he give any crap about that?
No, but he should have.
He should.
This team is now able to walk a fine line between being, being caught up in it but not being consumed by it. They're able to step back. One of the things that I thought was really interesting yesterday was that Heath Evans said, you have to be able to know when to relax when you're
right.
going into these games.
Right.
And that wouldn't be the first choice of words that I would think of when it comes to when it comes to playoff football. It's supposed to be intense. You know, you're supposed to be grinding all the time. You have to learn how to relax. You know, and you kind of went a little deeper. And Richard Seymour, I thought, also came up with an interesting point. He said, you know, you got to enjoy this because it doesn't come around all that often. You know, the playoff football, it's rare, and you have to be able to enjoy the moment. You have to be able to have fun with the moment, and I think that's one of the things that this team, a mostly veteran team, is able to do right now. They've been there before. This is not new for most of them, you know, other than maybe Brandon Merriweather and Wes Welker. This is really not new for most of these guys. Most of these guys have played deep into the postseason. I think 14 guys on this team, on the 53-man roster right now, have at least 10 games of postseason experience. So I think they're able to acknowledge the fact that there's pressure, but I think that they're able to deal with it in a much better fashion than a lot of teams.
I think that's pretty well said, Chris. And speaking of guys like Richard Seymour, who, by the way, does not dress semi-formally, one of the most well-dressed men in the NFL, we do have some sound. Richard Seymour addressed the media this afternoon. We're going to take a listen to that right now.
You know, I definitely rate him as one of the best backs that we've seen all year. And Drew comes in and do a good job as well. But, me and Junior was, kind of have a little joke that's going on. I always tell him, when God was giving out talents, I always tell Junior he always went back for seconds. And, when you look at Fred Taylor, he went back for seconds too. So they do a good job all the way across the board. You know, like I said, they're great 1-2 punch. And, defensively, we're going to have our work cut out for us because we can be in the hole, we can be in the gap, know what to do. But they do such a good job of making you miss. And so.
A guy like Taylor, 31 years of age, it doesn't seem that he played against this team in 99. Mm-hmm. He's been around forever, and he doesn't seem to have lost it. How could that be?
Well, I think a lot of credit has to go to his training in the off season. Obviously, he's been hurt, but actually, I saw him a couple times during the off season, and You know, he's been, working with some real experienced guys as far as rehabbing and getting them back on the field. So he's been doing a good job of taking care of his body. He's the ultimate pro, and we have a lot of respect for him.
Richard, two-part question here. Part one, what does Wolfork do in and of his own role, and how does that help you with Ty or Jarvis?
Well, Vince is kind of like that centerpiece in the middle that, doesn't move. You know, that constant force that's always there. And, what it does is, as long as we take care of our responsibilities outside, we can turn the ball into him. And there isn't many centers in this league that can block Vince. So, he's a strong guy. He's low center of gravity. He has a high football IQ, and he does a great job. So, we're definitely going to need that, in the biggest game of the year.
Part two of that question is, how's he get all those fines? He seems like such a nice fella.
Right, he is a nice fella. But you have to have that mentality. When you're on the field, I look at it as sort of like a peaceful warrior. You're peaceful off the field and fun, loving guy, a father, and a good friend. But on the field, he's a warrior, and fines are part of the game. Obviously, we don't go out and try to create any, but I think some of it just comes along with the territory.
Richard, did the Jaguars remind you at all of your teams of the early part of this decade, whereas they were always very good, not a whole lot of Pro Bowl recognition, hungry for the playoffs? Did you remind you a lot of that?
Yeah, I think they do a good job of bringing that type of mentality. I think they do a good job of running the football, stopping the run. They have, really good players. They're well coached. So I think, when you look at us, I think it's sort of like the same qualities, and they do a good job of doing what they do.
Richard, how do you feel this week 17 after missing, the first 6-7 weeks?
It was the reason I was out. Obviously having a surgery, so obviously getting back in the groove, getting back seeing the recognition of blocks and also getting, football stamina. It's a lot different than just, waking up and just, stepping out on the football field. I think you have to get in football condition, football shape, and I think especially as a defensive lineman, because if you're an every down player, I think you have to have the ability to rush the passer, stop the run sideline to sideline. It's a difference than just getting out there running around. When you got to take on guys, take on blocks and shed blocks and stay strong, be explosive. So I think it's a lot that plays into it, and you have to work your way to that level. So
would it be fair to say that
I think I'm definitely moving in the right direction. I'm excited where I'm at, and it'll be exciting come Saturday night.
Richard, they say playoff higher level is moved, not higher level, but it's always in the playoffs. Defense is such an important aspect in many cases for the eventual winner. Do you notice emotionally, physically, whatever, when you get into a playoff that there is a higher level, that there is a higher pace?
I definitely think the pace picks up. I think every play is magnified, and you never know which play it is, and you never want to be the guy that don't take care of your responsibilities. But I think in situations like this, I think the best thing that you can do is just simplify the game, take care of your responsibility, do your job, and hopefully the guy beside you takes that same approach and have fun doing it. You can't come in here and be tense, be tight, not have fun. This is something that you work all year long for. This is one of the reasons that you play this game, to be in situations like this, to have great opportunities. And we put ourselves in a great position, to finish our goal. And Saturday night will be our first step. Yeah, he's a big, strong guy in the pocket. He's hard to bring down. You can have guys on him, and he'll, shake those guys off. I kind of put him in that same mold of Steve McNair being able to shake off tacklers and do a good job and be elusive in the pocket. And, he's, a smart guy. He doesn't make many turnovers. And, he's really good for their offense and what they're trying to do. Obviously, their coaching staff feels the same way.
Does your responsibility with a mobile quarterback like that change? Because you move around. You're sometimes you're inside. You're sometimes out there. You have to be aware of he's got better feet.
Yeah, I think you have to be aware of where he is and, what's his qualities, what he brings to the table. Awareness of our rush lanes, knowing that we just, can't rush around and leave lanes because he can, you saw in that Pittsburgh game, it was 4th-and-2. I mean, the season was on the line. It was quarterback draw. And so they put the ball in his hands, and he was able to go out and make a play.
All right, that was Richard Seymour, Patriots defensive lineman, speaking to the media today. And I'm sorry. When God gave out talent, you went back for seconds? I mean, is that a pickup line or something? What?
Hey.
You should try that in the bar, Chris.
He also used as well to see, I don't go to bars anymore. I'm married.
When God gave out buns, you went back for seconds. See how that works out for you.
It's clear that he loves Fred Taylor. He
loves Junior Seau. I mean, he's used that line now. I mean,
He used the phrase the other day. He used the phrase, I think it was on Monday, when talking about Fred Taylor. He said, it's like a fine wine. I heard him say this twice. Like a fine wine. He gets better with age.
Wow.
And so this team really, I think it's genuine.
This is a little unhealthy.
Well, I think it's genuine when it comes to talking about this team. Usually, sometimes there are weeks where this team will kind of artificially inflate an opponent, and they're kind of winking at you and saying, we really don't believe this publicly, but, this is what we're saying. I honestly believe that this week these guys have a genuine respect for the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Well, maybe they see a little bit of themselves in the Jaguars.
Yeah,
we talked about that.
You know something? Especially, and Seymour touched on that there early as well.
Yeah, he did.
One of the things that made that Patriots team of 0-1 really good was that they were able to stop the run. They were able to run the football. They were the Patriots of 0-1, and we talked a little bit about this also as well. Antoine Smith, that was his one great year here
right,
in New England.
Right.
And he did a good job moving the chains. He wasn't asked to do a whole lot, but he did a good job moving the chains, and he did a good job of keeping the offense going. Now, that 0-1 Patriots team finished off with a Super Bowl title, as we all know. We have no idea what this Jacksonville team is going to do. I don't think that they are at that level yet.
No, they're not quite there.
I think they're getting close. I think they're a good team. I think they're going in the right direction. But I don't think they're at that level just yet.
Well, they're running into the wrong team right now.
Yeah.
Maybe they'd have a shot at Indianapolis. I still would be skeptical about that. But I guess going back to Seymour, it's hard not to love a man who says maybe the Pro Bowl doesn't deserve Fred Taylor. That's Fred Taylor speaking about Fred Taylor.
Yeah.
That's a great line, by the way. God bless him. He's going to the game now, and he's downplayed it today, and he's more concerned about just playing this game. And if you're a Jaguar fan, you're concerned about those leg cramps that knocked him out against Pittsburgh last week. He left the game, and he said he cramped up chasing down one of Garrard's interceptions. I love that. Yeah, well, I hurt myself chasing after your interception. I didn't say it that way, but he says I'll have to hydrate a little more and eat a little bit better. So no late-night pizza on Friday night for Fred Taylor.
Keep it clean
on Friday.
WebRadioAtPatriots.com. That's WebRadioAtPatriots.com. Shoot us an email. Let us know what you're thinking about this Jacksonville Jaguars team. Do they have a shot at knocking off the Patriots Saturday night here at Gillette?
No. That ends the show, guys. All right, we'll see you later. I don't think it's going to be a great game. I think maybe for a quarter or two, Jacksonville hangs in there. But I think a team that does not have that is not as well balanced across the board eventually gets exposed and gets worn down.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that I would be concerned about if I'm the Jaguars, is just getting worn out to the point where, you may stop them a few times, but eventually they're going to get to you. Eventually, this offense is going to put the points on the board. They've done it all year.
A perfect scenario for Jacksonville is that they get up by a score, they win the coin toss, they go down. Nice conservative drive, 10 plays, 80 yards, whatever. Punch the ball in the end zone. Then they get a little help on special teams.
Right.
They end up with a nice return. They end up with a blocked kick. They end up with a punt return. Whatever. They take advantage of something on special teams. Because, again, as we've said before, Jacksonville has a pretty good special teams unit. And then they hang around, and hope that someone like Rasheen Mathis, Paul Spicer, whoever, makes a play down the stretch that ends up winning the game for them. I don't see a scenario where Jacksonville comes in here and just blows away the Patriots.
No, I think
Jacksonville, if they want to win, they have to play a perfect game. They have to get a great performance out of their special teams. They need to get an exceptional performance out of that defense. I don't think it's going to happen, though.
Well, they may need that kind of game they got against Tampa Bay or Tennessee, where the defense stepped up. They score a defensive touchdown. Mm-hmm. You get big special teams play. You run the ball. You control the clock. That's what it's going to take. You want to score, but I think ultimately you want to take these 7 or 8 minute drives, and you got to finish them off. Obviously,
and there's something to the idea that this Patriots team is a lot like the old Colts team.
Right.
Where the best way to stop him is to keep the offense off the field. And the Jags are set up to do that if everything falls together for them. You know, they do have that running game. They do have that kind of slow, consistent attack that can take, you know, take time off the clock if you need it, if you're in that situation, and keep the Patriots off the field. Again, I don't think, you know, we're throwing all this out there, but at the same time, I don't think they have
the weapons. I don't think they have the options. Yeah.
You know, it's available in, we're saying in a perfect world for Jacksonville, this is what would happen if they want to win the game. But I don't see it happening.
No, we're just looking for some talking points here, obviously. Yes. And I think, but you know something, I go back to the point you made, the comparison to the old Indianapolis Colt teams, and I think that's a fair comparison because I look at this New England defense this year. Good defense, not great. To me, not the shutdown defense of 03 and 04. Now, they haven't had to be, okay, because they're scoring 45 a game and they're putting up sick offensive numbers. Mm-hmm. They have not had to go out there and win a game 10-9 or 6-3, or anything of that nature. So maybe a little bit of the numbers can be, maybe the performances are deceiving. Maybe they're just giving up some plays. You could argue that the intensity is not always there if you're up 35-0 at the half. So maybe you give up a couple of touchdowns in the second half. It's not always indicative of how you would perform in a close game. Is that fair? Yes,
it is. It's very fair. Vrabel talked a little bit about that today.
Yeah.
That they're one of the reasons that they've gone back to hitting on that 60 minutes theme this week. Over and over and over and over and over again, because they have. There have been times this year where their attention, for lack of a better term, has wandered. You know, the second half of that Cleveland game comes to mind. The Miami game, where they kind of lose focus a little bit, and they need something to kind of slap them back awake again. And it's usually a fourth down stop. It's usually a big defensive play. It's an interception. It's a run back. It's a big play on special teams. They're able to get that in time to kind of wake up and kind of pull them out of their complacency.
You know, the funny thing is, what really concerns me are the red zone numbers. You could say it's an aberration because it's hard not to score in the red zone, and if you get the ball at the one, even a great defense is going to give up that touchdown more often than not. Mm-hmm. But to be dead last in the league in that category for most of the year and to be this good overall, it's kind of lopsided to me. You know, there's less space down there. You should be able to close the gaps a little bit more and be able to shut it down, I think. Now, again, you got to wonder, you know, how much of that is dependent on the score, the situation, the clock, everything. That would concern me. But then I go back and I look at the Colt game. When they needed it the most, they got those red zone stops.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they had two big red zone stops and held Indianapolis to field goals in that game. So, I mean, at some point, they flipped the switch.
For you, it's quantity, not quality. Or for you, it's quality and not quantity.
Right.
They've needed those red, especially in the other game that comes to mind for me anyway, is Pittsburgh.
Yes.
They were able to make,
absolutely,
I think, two red zone stops, two plays back-to-back. Harrison knocked away a ball.
Yes.
And also followed that up with a great play on fourth down inside the five. It's the importance of the red zone stops that I think, you know, given the situation, given the context of that game, you're going to get red zone misses. You know, in certain games, again, it depends on when they come. So you're saying really it's about the quality of the stop in the red zone as opposed to the number of stops in the red zone.
Yeah, the more I think about it, the more I start to sway in that direction. Because I just think that if you get the ball at the five offensively, you should score anyway, regardless of who's defending you.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's hard not to. You'd have to really be a monumental screw-up to not be able to punch it in or get something out of it, even get the field goal out of it. Now, mm-hmm. So maybe the red zone numbers aren't as indicative of a defensive team's effort, or a team's defensive effort, I should say. In other words, you go into a game and not give up a ton of yards, and maybe maybe get some bad field position, and they get inside the 20 and they score. Are you a bad defense?
Mm-hmm. No,
you know,
one of the things, though, for me anyway, and I've been accused of kind of beating this horse a lot by email, by beating
animal
the horse
cruelty.
A lot by emailers who say, why do you keep hitting on this red zone defensive problem? Why do you keep hitting on this? Well, it's one thing that they as a team continue to talk about, and it's one thing for them that continues to be a point of emphasis. One of the things that I thought was interesting was you take the Pittsburgh Jets and Miami game. Opposing teams had 9 trips inside the red zone combined in those 3 games. They failed to score a touchdown on each one of those trips.
Wow.
Now, the Giants game, the Giants cashed in with touchdowns on all four trips inside the 20. Now, I think that they were making steps in the right direction, coming down toward the end of the season, but I think you could argue that that red zone defense as a whole took a step back in that last game against the Giants. Again, we're not looking for, you know, we're not saying that this is a huge problem. We're not saying that this is
it's not going to end the season.
Uncorrectable problem.
No.
I'm not saying it's, you know, but these are things that they're working on. These are things that are clearly points of emphasis for them going forward into the postseason.
If it wasn't a concern, they wouldn't be working on it. And they wouldn't be emphasizing it through us and in practice. I think it is a concern to them, and they are working on it. We do have another email, finally. Warren from the UK.
Warren.
We have some overseas listeners. That's really good to hear. And he says, I don't think the Jags beat the Patriots at all. I think the running game will be contained, and I also believe the Jags will try and surprise the Pats by throwing a bit more than usual. Brady will spread the offense and will have at least 3 touchdowns. Seriously. So in case you thought he was joking, he tells you he's serious. I agree with Warren in one regard. Maybe Jacksonville will come out and maybe try to switch things up and throw.
I don't think they can do that.
But the Patriots have done that, though. I mean,
yeah, but the Patriots can do that.
But they can do it.
They can do it. I think that they can do that. I don't think that all of a sudden Matt Jones is going to catch, you know, 15 balls for 110 yards. You know, they're just not set up that way. I don't think that they have the offensive options to do something like that.
Can they catch him off guard enough to maybe get on the board?
I think maybe there's a chance of one or two plays. I think maybe the only way that happens is if Jacksonville pulls off a great play action fake. You know, because the Patriots are going to be so focused on stopping the run,
right. They're
going to be so focused on containing Taylor and Jones-Drew, maybe they'll be able to hit him early with a play action fake. And again, I'll be honest, I don't know Garrard's ability when it comes to play action. I don't know how good he is in play action, and I don't know the Jaguars' abilities in play action overall. But at the same time, I can see them maybe trying to pull that off if you're trying to kind of shake things up a little bit offensively.
I kind of think they might now. I'm starting to side with Warren on this one.
Seriously.
Seriously. That's what he says, too. Seriously. He's not kidding. He's not kidding, and I'm not kidding around here. Because I almost think you have to. I mean, the whole world thinks you're going to come out with Taylor and Jones-Drew. And you've done it all year, and no one's really been able to stop you. But at what point... See, it goes back to coaching differently in the playoffs, and do you change the strategy, or do you stick with what works?
You stick with what works. Yeah. For this team especially, they're so geared towards success on the ground. And they do that one thing almost better than anyone else in the National Football League. It would be stunning to me, and it would be a huge mistake on the part of Jack Del Rio to try and change his approach, to try and change his style, given the fact that he doesn't have the options to do it.
Yeah.
You know, at this point in the season.
If he had some receivers,
yeah. Like we said at the start of the show, you know, if you put Jabbar Gaffney and Dante Stallworth on that team, who knows what could happen?
One guy would make a difference.
Yeah,
Stallworth alone would probably make a difference.
They don't have the ability to stretch the field.
You're right.
They just don't have the ability to stretch the field. And I think that, combined with a couple other things, is ultimately going to doom them on Saturday night against the Patriots.
Garrard's going to have to really come up big here in this game because I think there are going to be times.
It's a huge game for him, yeah.
He is going to have to throw. They're not going to get away with throwing 30 times a game because this goes back to the 05 game. Okay, this goes back again. We go back 2 years, and Leftwich had a great year that season.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, had a nice season, probably his best in the NFL. And, again, it was not the type of year where he was throwing 40 times a game. Came here and had to throw a lot, and it did not go well. And as you saw, the final score was 28-3.
Yeah.
Again, it was taking away what they did best and making them switch to Plan B, and Plan B usually is not that good for most of these teams.
And that's
just
why
not
you see,
as multifaceted.
That's why, especially in that case, that's why you saw Willie McGinnis get 4.5 sacks, which I think
that was a playoff
tied
record.
Or set a playoff record.
That actually did set a playoff record.
You
is,
made
yes.
them a one-dimensional team, and again, I'll go back to the old phrase from Jarvis Green, the defensive linemen and linebackers were just able to pin their ears back and just head after the quarterback. And it made things really difficult. It made Jacksonville a one-dimensional team, and they weren't able to execute on the offensive side of the football.
Listen to you, Mr. Cliche, pinning the ears back.
That's
like
a cliche.
That's like your seventh or eighth cliche of the day.
That's not a cliche.
That's not a cliche.
We got to play him one day at a time.
Yeah.
Pinning your ears back is not a cliche.
Of course it is.
No, it's not. Jarvis Green.
He made that up.
Wouldn't resort to a cliche. He's too good a player. Too smart a guy. I've talked with him. I've spent time with him. He's a smart guy. He would not resort to a cliche.
I spent time with him. Listen to you.
Well, he's not the kind of guy.
Did he come to your book signings?
After having conversations with him over the years, he doesn't appear to be the kind of guy who would throw out a cliche like
Unbelievable.
That.
Unbelievable.
That's all
I'm saying. You are drinking the Kool-Aid.
I'm not drinking the Kool-Aid. I'm just saying that's not a cliche.
No one's above a good cliche. Let me tell you that.
That's true. I'll definitely give you that. Webradio@patriots.com. That's webradio@patriots.com.
I'm still waiting on this injury report here. Do we have anything yet? No, we've had nothing.
No, 4 o'clock.
We know Nick Kazier practiced.
Nick Kazier practiced.
That's what we know. So that's a good sign because we talked about that matchup at the line of scrimmage, the offensive line versus this Jacksonville defensive line. And you're going to need everybody out there 100%, or at least close enough to it.
I think the Patriots would also love to see Stephen Neal back out there. Stephen Neal has been bothered through much of the season with a shoulder problem, and he has not played. I'll get you the numbers here in 1 second.
Well, you need that because they get some pressure up the middle as well. It's not like we talked about earlier. It's not all off the edge on the outside. So it's more than just having the right tackles and the right tight end tackle combination, but also having your center and your guard combinations up to date too as well and intact, because if not, they're going to come through the middle and they're going to get at Brady a little bit harder.
Also, one of the most important things when it comes to the success, the overall success of an offensive line, is continuity and consistency. You want to be able to run those same five guys out there every week. And if you have injuries, if you're dealing with kind of, you know, shuffling guys in and out of there, you're not sure every week how good that guy's going to be, you know, on the other side of the football. He's actually, Stephen Neal's only played, not on the other side of the football, excuse me.
Right.
Stephen Neal has only played 8 games this year.
Jeez.
Most of them due to, again, a nagging shoulder injury. If they can get Neal back out there for the playoffs, if they can get Kazier out there for the playoffs, and if Kyle Brady is healthy enough to go, I would feel very comfortable about the state, the right side of that offensive line.
Yeah, well, I'm reading a little bit about this Mike Peterson situation, and he says after the Pittsburgh game that he's on a play and he's coming back, and Del Rio's not 100% sure. He says, I think you can call that chomping at the bit. And he wants to get back in. He hasn't played in 7 games since he broke his right hand. Mm-hmm. So he's been out since the second week of November. So you got to wonder, even if he's in there, this is his first game back in 2 months, and you're going to throw him in the fire against the best offense in the NFL?
We saw a little bit of that around here with Richard Seymour.
Right.
And the fact that Richard Seymour took some time.
But you know that it was early enough for him where he could come back, and now he apparently I think has been peaking at this point.
Yeah, but by his own admission, it took him time to get back. You know, you can only do so many things, working out on your own and you know, in the weight room and doing this and that. There's no substitute.
No,
there's no substitute for game reps, and Richard Seymour found that out really in a big way earlier in the season. He's now just peaking again. You wonder about a guy's ability to come back from an injury when his first game back is the second game of the playoffs.
Yeah, my guess is he comes back but is not playing as big a role as you would expect from a guy of his caliber.
Exactly. He's not going to be an every down guy.
No, they're going to switch it up because they've done a pretty decent job with what they've had right now defensively.
Yeah.
No, they haven't gotten torched. You know, the Pittsburgh game, that fourth quarter was a disaster. But outside of that, I thought played a very sound defensive game against – I thought they made Roethlisberger look foolish at times.
They did.
And I
think they finished with 6 sacks on the day.
I thought Roethlisberger played one of the worst games he's probably ever played.
Turned the ball over 4 times on the evening, 3 interceptions and 1 fumble. For a guy who had a pretty good regular season.
He actually did have a strong year.
Probably one of the 3 best quarterbacks in the AFC during the regular season. He really did not have – you know, that fourth quarter aside, he didn't have a good postseason.
Now, I just don't see New England having those kind of protection problems against this front. I know this front's a very good one, but again, if I'm a Patriot fan, I've got confidence in this line's ability to block. I like the tight end situation there with Kyle Brady, probably one of the better blocking tight ends. I mean, they did a really nice job replacing Daniel Graham. Mm-hmm. I mean, because when you lost Daniel Graham, you're thinking, well, you know, that's a big time blocker up front, and that's going to have to be replaced. And I think Brady's done a pretty good job filling in that regard.
One of the things that might be interesting to look for is the fact that the Patriots have had a little trouble over the last few weeks, not so much against the Giants, but in the final weeks of the regular season with an unbalanced line.
Right.
We've seen a lot of really different and exotic fronts that people have tried to throw at the Patriots. Philadelphia is the game that comes to mind for me where they had, you know, maybe more than a few linebackers up there. They didn't maybe have someone over the center. They were coming from different angles. Now, you could argue that the talent level, at least on the defensive side of the ball, was maybe a little bit better and they were looking to exploit matchups. But again, I wouldn't put it past Jacksonville to maybe try some things like that. Nothing too exotic. But maybe try some things like that. Give New England some different looks defensively. Try and shake it up a little bit.
Well, I think you have to. When you play this team, I think you have to empty the tank, so to speak.
Yeah.
Speaking of cliches, Yeah, but you really do. You got to use every page in the playbook because you can't hold anything back at this point. You can't save something for next week.
Yeah.
Because you play this team, and more often than not, there is not a next week.
One of the things that stands out for me about the teams that really pushed the Patriots this year is that they were willing to take chances. They were willing to lose games 100-0. You know, they were able to. They threw everything possible out there. They did things that they didn't usually do. You know, we talked a little bit about this, that Jacksonville maybe, you know, was going to get away from this, and maybe they do need to get away from it. You know, their traditional attack a little bit. I just don't know if they have the guys to do it. But again, one of the things that the opponents that have really pushed the Patriots this year, they've really made it a point to try and do new stuff. To try and take some chances, to try and put everything out there. Like you said, use the old cliche, throw the kitchen sink at them, because if you don't, chances are you might not be coming back the next week.
See, it's a tough balance. It's really tough to decide whether you stick to everything by the book or do you start adding new wrinkles now.
I think you can add a few wrinkles, but I don't think you can go crazy. I think you have to work within the overall context of your offense. I don't think you can go hog wild and start adding flea flickers and triple reverses and stuff like that. But I think that there are things that you can do to try and shake things up on both sides of the ball. And again, I wouldn't be surprised if the Jags try some of that. I don't think, however, they're going to get too crazy because, again, on the offensive side of the football, they don't have a whole lot of options other than Taylor and Jones-Drew.
Right. We got another email from Glenn in Calgary. Glenn writes, so another, yeah. Outside the United States, and two in a row.
We're
here.
Very big overseas.
We are. Glenn writes, assuming that the defense that holds the Patriot offense to 24 points has had a pretty good day, do you think that the Jaguars can score more than 24? This game has the makings of a 24-17 affair and a Patriots win. Likely not a thriller to watch. Your thoughts?
I don't think the Jags are capable of scoring more than 24 points.
I think they can score right around 24, actually.
I think if everything worked out perfectly for them, they could break it. But I don't see that happening.
My problem is I don't think they're going to hold the Patriots 24.
No.
So I don't think 24. I think they could score 24, and it's not going to be enough. It's not going to make a difference.
No, I don't think that they can score. I don't think that they're going to score 24 points against the Patriots. And if that holds up, I think it's going to be a victory for New England.
What is this now, super fans? Patriots 45, Jaguars 3.
The mini Dicka 42-3.
You know, you gotta go back to looking at the Steeler game a bit too. And as bad as Roethlisberger played, there were times, like I said, where he did pick apart that secondary, and they got the protection, and they were able to spread them out on defense a bit.
We're talking about
that would concern me about the Jaguars because I mean, this team, who can spread it out better than New England? I mean, Hines Ward had 140 receiving yards in that game. What do we think Moss is going to do? We think Welker's going to do?
So you know what? I'll take this back. We're talking about this. I don't think the Jaguars are capable of scoring 24 points. They averaged. Steven, guess what they averaged per game?
24.
More than that, 25.7 points a game.
Oh, okay.
Which is not bad.
That's
which
not
is
bad
not
at
bad.
All.
So I will take that back. They are completely capable of scoring more than 24 points, but I don't think it's going to happen.
They can score on this defense.
Yeah.
I don't see why not, but they're not going to hold them to 24.
No.
I just don't. No. Can't see it. It's not going to happen, man. I'm telling you. We could have ended the show 2 hours ago. We're all in agreement here.
We could have done 5 minutes of radio, and that's it.
We could have had a campfire here and had a really good time.
Webradio@patriots.com. Webradio@patriots.com. We only got a few more minutes. 6 more minutes before we slide on out of here.
I would love the injury report before we get out of here, just so we could break it down a little bit. But we're obviously not going to get that. That's going to come as soon. They're listening upstairs, you know.
At 4:01.
Bill is listening, and he's waiting until we sign off, and then he's going to hit send on his little thing, and that's the end of it.
At 4:01.
And that's the last time I'm invited back here, folks. All right.
what do you think is going to happen Saturday?
It's going to happen.
Give me a breakdown here. Give me a breakdown here. Give me a breakdown. What's going to happen? How do you see things shaking out? You know, give me a final score and give me some details from the game as to what you think is going to happen Saturday night between the Patriots and the Jaguars.
Patriots are going to come out on their first drive, 5 wide, empty backfield. They're going to run down the field and score.
Okay.
They're going to score right away. Jacksonville's going to come out. Somebody's going to fumble. They're going to lose the football. I think it's going to get ugly early. I can see one of those games where it gets ugly early. You have a couple of turnovers. It's like 14-0, 17-0. Then the game goes into a crawl. Mm-hmm. And then we're bored. And you and I are sitting up in the press box for 2 quarters, and we're playing online video games. That's what's going to happen in quarters two and three. You know, then in the fourth quarter, the Patriots score again. They get a defensive touchdown of some sort, break the game open. I'm looking at 35-21.
Wow, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm not sure where I get those numbers from. I'm just pulling it out there, and I'm going to give you 35-21, and I will. You can write it down, take a picture.
Write it down.
Send it to all your friends. I see that kind of game. I can see some garbage touchdowns in the end. I see a game that gets
Kyle
out of
Eichel
hand early.
Punching it in from the one.
The human victory cigar, as some people have referred to him as. I can see that getting out of hand early, and then the game kind of digressing into a stalemate at some point.
Okay.
Where it gets very boring.
Okay.
I do not think it's going to be an interesting game. It's not going to be anything like the two games that we had on Wild Card Weekend, or at least a couple of the games. Mm-hmm. The Seattle-Washington game, that was a pretty entertaining game.
Yeah.
For a while.
Yeah.
The Pittsburgh-Jacksonville game, obviously a very entertaining game.
That was a really great football game.
This one won't be. This is not. I mean, for Patriots fans, it's going to be a lot of fun, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
but just from an aesthetic perspective,
yeah,
it's not
you don't
be
really
good.
Care about. I mean, you know, you hope your team wins every game 72-0. You really would never get, even if you say you get bored with that, you would not get bored with that. You would love every second of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as an outsider, no, I don't really care to watch this one too much. I think the Giants-Cowboys game is going to be a much better game. Indianapolis-San Diego is probably going to be the best game of the weekend in my book.
Yeah. I think the other three games are going to be more dramatic, I think. But I think at the same time, I think nationally, the Patriots are still a very compelling story. I think in the wake of Spygate and I think
of
you know, the push for an undefeated season, I think there are enough storylines there to keep people riveted. I don't think it's a surprise that they're – That's why they're the Saturday night game.
But a lot of people aren't looking at it as if saying, well, if they win at all, it's like, well, when and how? How are they going to do this? How are they going to pull this off?
I think they're going to win Saturday night. I think they're going to win fairly easily. I think my final score is going to be 31-17. I think they're going to make it I think Jacksonville's going to come within maybe single digits in the third, but I think there's going to be some sort of play, whether it's an interception or run back. Or a fumble recovery or what. I think the game is going to turn for good probably late in the third quarter, and I think by the fourth quarter it's going to be pretty much a done deal. I don't think it's going to be all that dramatic. My prediction, 31-17, write it down.
Are you picking all favorites this weekend?
Yeah.
I'm going to take Seattle just to be different. That's my one underdog. That's all I've got. I've only got one request today. I want Gary Gradecki to close out today with some Phil Collins. And that's really all I want. We had two great hours, and I want to close out on a high note. I think this has been another great show. We had some emails today. We had some fun. We had some feedback from our fans. We're going to ride off into the sunset, folks. This was a great show. Chris Price, I want to thank you again for joining me.
Thank you. Hey, by the way, let me get my plugs in here.
Plug it in.
PatsFans.com, PatriotsDaily.com, and pick me up if you're in the city of Boston, Boston Metro. Thank you very much.
We will see you all on Saturday.
Check out my column today, though, on PatriotsDaily.com inside Gillette.
Thanks again for listening, guys. Good night.